Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, Ryan, and welcome to the Cognitive Recalibration Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shravan. Taran is again absent for this episode, but we are joined by three guests. So we've been on a bit of a Lord of the Rings series over the last three episodes. So we've got returning guests from each of the three episodes. So welcome, Bhaskar, Kiriti, and Bhargav.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back. I don't think we deserve an applause.
No, it's an applause for this TV show that we're about to read.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so obviously we've got you all back because we're talking about Rings of Power. So it's Lord of the Rings prequel series. We'll get into our thoughts on it, but it's obviously very divisive on the internet as well. There's been a lot of commentary about this from different areas. A lot of people want to talk about this, so it's going to be a very interesting episode. So as usual, we'll do a bit of background, then we'll go into our positives and negatives, spoiler-free, and then we'll spend most of the episode on spoilers.
Question.
But, yep.
When you say it's a prequel, is it considered a canonic prequel?
I don't.
It's not, right?
Think so. You mean in relation to the other two, the other movies?
Yeah.
No.
So the
movies were based on, like, probably, the Hobbit trilogy and.
So that's Lord a different universe to this.
Yeah.
We got universes now. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, officially separate universe, but Warner Brothers owns the rights to all depictions, like visual depictions of Peter Jackson's trilogy, technically. New Line Cinema has cooperated with the Amazon Prime folks for the Amazon folks to use the names and that kind of stuff. But
the rights to Tolkien's work fully, the concepts.
They can reference the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbits and the appendices, and they can't talk about anything in the Silmarillion explicitly.
Yeah,
I think the estate hasn't sold the rights of the Silmarillion yet.
It's a bit of, I think that's the starting point
of like a lot of misunderstanding between people. Like there's not much knowledge of what they can and can't talk about. It's kind of, in the shadows, but I think we get a hint from watching the series of what they are not touching on and what they kind of try and skirt around.
Yeah. I mean, a bit of background on when this is set. So it's in the Second Age of Middle Earth, which is thousands of years before Tolkien's Hobbit. It is produced, so it's Amazon Studios, but it is produced in cooperation with HarperCollins, which is a publisher, and New Line Cinema. So they have some stake in it, but obviously they still can't reference the original trilogy or the Hobbit movies as well.
Or physical likeness, I think, is what I saw. So like if you saw some weapons or artifacts or rings that from the Peter Jackson trilogy, they can't mimic those 100%.
Yes.
And look like them, but not exactly.
So Amazon bought the rights back in November 2017, and they've already committed to making 5 seasons. So worth at least $1 billion.
So that $1 billion was across the whole five
seasons. Yep. Ah. Yeah. So they bought the rights for $250 million, and then they've committed to $1 billion across 5 seasons.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is still.
I thought it was $1 billion just for this season. which was kind of unbelievable.
I think the season is 500 mil. So each episode was about 50 million on average.
Which is nuts.
Yeah, that's insane. Interesting.
Eight episodes, yeah.
This is obviously Amazon Studios. So Jeff Bezos was actually quite interested in this, even though it's like it's one of the legs in his company. But he was quite interested in acquiring the rights for this particular franchise. And he really pushed to get the rights under them. And he wanted to do something on the scale of Game of Thrones. So that's the reason he was really keen on getting it. So they were in competition with Netflix to get the rights, and they ended up getting them. And so the first season was filmed in New Zealand. Interestingly, the second season, they're moving to UK. So they're not filming in New Zealand.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. One of the like highlights of at least watching this first season is at least you get to see the sights of New Zealand again. I don't know how they're going to pull that off for the second. Maybe they're going to transition into a different area.
That must mean that it's the settings and what they're going to be focusing on will change. Because if you're what in this season required New Zealand?
I think more of the different locations, the grand. Oh, some people are starting in the east of Middle Earth. Some people are starting off in Linden. So the variable locations may have led the requirement to go to New
Zealand. I guess that means that stuff in like pre-Mordor, all those scenes in the farmlands and stuff must have been New Zealand. They're not using those anymore, obviously.
Yeah. And then the Valinor.
Oh, yeah. That was also definitely.
That was in New Zealand. And then also Numenor, New Zealand as well. Well, those hills
mostly. I thought that was anything that wasn't like a natural. So it looked like set. Yeah,
but you know that when they're like riding a horse to get to like
the western side of Nevada.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
If that is what they did, which I don't think actually is what they. I don't know what. Anyway, but when they're going across or traversing, they had like, which technically doesn't make sense because islands don't really exist like that. New Zealand is the one exception.
Yeah, I mean, if they're filmed in New Zealand, it's not that big on the map.
Howard Shaw composed the theme of the show, but he's not the composer for the whole show. So there's the actual composer is Bear McCreary.
It's actually everything, 99% of the music was amazing except for that, the last song, the very, very last song.
It's a bit suspect.
I thought it was pretty awesome. The music.
It's pretty good. I mean, he's pretty well known for composing. I think he started out early with The Walking Dead and really kind of different shows. And now he's also scoring.
Bear McCreary.
Yeah. Has he done anything apart
from Walking Dead? He's scored the God of War video games. He's done a lot of good work with films recently.
Yeah, and then there's eight episodes in the season, three directors across the eight. So J.A. Bayona did the first two, and he is – so previously he directed or is most well known for directing Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, so the second Jurassic World movie, and Charlotte Brandstrom – directed another two, so she's got a pretty prolific career in terms of TV directing, but most recently she did The Witcher and Jupiter's Legacy, both on Netflix.
Nice.
The other director who did four episodes, including the finale, was Wayne Chi Yip, who we were just discussing before, but he's a British film director, most known for Utopia, Doctor Who, and this show. Quickly talk about the viewership. So, obviously, this is the most viewed Amazon show. So, they reported that.
Yes.
So you always have to take these viewership numbers with a grain of salt because it isn't publicly available information. So, the company has to come out and actually say it.
Right.
So, Amazon came out and said they got 25 million viewers globally for the first 24 hours, and they released two episodes in the first 24
Interesting.
Hours.
Interesting.
But anyway, interesting thing is there's a lot of people that monitor these ratings in terms of streaming. And apparently in the first week, it was the second highest viewed streaming show behind She-Hulk, which was interesting.
That's interesting.
In the US.
Could that just be because Disney Plus has much more of a like viewer base?
No, it's because She-Hulk's bloody amazing. Did you not see the trailer? MCU. Yeah.
Which I found interesting because She-Hulk was, I think it already had a couple of episodes by the time this came out. So, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, but it's definitely the most successful Amazon streaming show, which was expected because they don't have huge properties.
Well, they have been pushing it as well because like every box you get from Amazon since the last 2 months had like Rings of Power tape on it.
Yeah.
If you go to Amazon, like the main website, and you buy something, you literally got trailers streaming as you check out the thing. And so obviously they're pushing.
They're really pushing.
They definitely want to make sure that everyone knows about it.
But also Amazon's directly producing this, unlike like The Boys, which is produced by separate and then Amazon has bought it.
It's, correct.
Put it on a streaming platform, right? Has Amazon directly produced anything else?
Yeah, I think they've got
Halo.
Halo? Hmm. Oh, is it good?
Halo, I don't know, but I do want to talk about some other shows that have been produced.
They've got that Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I think, which is Amazon. All right, we can jump into positives and negatives. So we don't have to really go through a story of the show. We'll probably do that in spoilers, but let's just go around the room. So we'll start with Bougie. What are your positives or negatives? Whatever you want to start on.
Let's go positives first for everyone.
Positives first. Yeah. All right. We touched on music. The music is actually very good in a lot of parts. I think I wasn't able to pay attention to the music in so many areas, though, just because of, like, I was just so confused with a lot of stuff that was happening. But the music, like, in general, when you look back on it, I do remember music being really good at parts. I did like, and this is, like, I guess episodes 1 to 3 mainly, where they, like, have those, like, cinematic views of the locations with, like, the writing of where they're actually are. And I thought that was really cool. It's nice to see sort of locations that you wanted to see that have come directly from the texts. And it's pretty much, the acting was, like, some characters you could tell that the actors have done a decent job with what they're given.
Yeah.
It's a shame that they weren't given more to work with.
There was also some parts where the acting wasn't that good as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like
one
it was
particular
one,
part.
Yeah. There was one episode where
crying
I
scene?
Was, yeah. We'll talk about this soon, but I was like, this guy's the only guy that can act. And then he starts crying.
Yeah. I know. Like, my favorite character is like, oh my God. He did not practice this part.
So, look, those three, I'm just going to stick with those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Piece of shit.
So I'm probably going to be the dissenting opinion on this podcast. Initially, I was actually quite positive about this series. I didn't watch any trailers. I didn't watch any of the Comic-Con footage.
Well, we're just doing positives, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, just for now.
I thought you were about to get to a negative.
Not a negative. Oh, yeah. Just not straight blasting it. No. I basically just I didn't really hype myself up for this because I knew it could go either way. I watched it and I was thankful that there is another. I'm actually happy there's another interpretation of Tolkien. There's more material out there. Like in Peter Jackson's own words, when we wrapped up the Return of the King podcast last week, we're talking about how he wanted to take the fantasy and the universe that Tolkien built and give it its own life, right? And I think this is a good example of this taking on a life of its own, where you see a different interpretation of it. The show did quite well in terms of getting the feel of being in Middle Earth. I felt like, yeah, we're back, you know, especially thanks to them filming in New Zealand, and the production value as well was up there to kind of match the feel of when you see some of these places that, you know, are described about, you know, Middle Earth, Eregion, Numenor, you do kind of feel like, oh, okay, wow, they're actually going into these places. You see the camera going in there. That was done well. The execution of certain places was done well. And I did quite like there's many arcs of different character storylines in this series. There are some that are done really well. Like you kind of actually feel for the characters and you invest emotionally in them. So there were a select few that did an amazing job, and I'll call out the actors who did this work. And another positive I think is there's a lot of, I mean, despite what a lot of the fandom might think, there is a lot of attention to detail, small bits of attention to detail that I think the producers, directors and creators earnestly tried to incorporate. So that wasn't lost. I mean, sure, the fans will pick up on certain details here and there, but yeah, there was a lot of detail put into it by the actors, by the producers, the set designers. It's not easy to build worlds. And I think I've said this on a lot of podcasts. I love good world building when they establish like a place that we haven't seen before. So yeah, that's all done well. The music as well, Ben McCreary knocked it out of the park. And I think this will be a great entry point for people who are not familiar with the books, but I've only seen the movies. This series might be made for that group, to be honest. Like people who have not read the books, have only watched the Peter Jackson films.
Yeah, which is me. So
yeah,
I can.
Yeah. And I'm kind of intrigued, or they've heard whispers about the story behind the scenes and the Silmarillion. I think this would actually be suited for you if you watch it, right? That's probably my positive on Rings of Power.
I kind of agree with you there. I think there's only a certain group that will like this, which are people that have only watched the movies, are kind of interested in backstories, but have not bothered to find out anything else. But I also think, well, I know a few that people like that, and they have like this show lost them within two episodes. So I don't know. I don't know who this is for, but the intention, I guess, was for everyone. But yeah, positives, as you guys have already mentioned, music is awesome. Sets are awesome. I think the best part was the excitement before it started was probably the best part of all of this. I mean,
hype,
like
the hype here.
Yeah, the hype was great. I mean, everyone was pumped. You watch the trailer and you're like, oh my God, there's some awesome things that are going to happen. So I think those were, yeah, for me, those were the positives. And yeah, there were instances of good acting. And there's like, I guess certain actors will probably leapfrog off this and go on to other projects, which would be great. And there were some action scenes which were awesome. And there were some like particular episodes where you knew there was a lot of money spent and you could see it, and it was all, you know, really cool. The CGI and the graphics were really good as well. So I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think production values are pretty good. For a TV show, this is probably one of the best. I mean, they marketed it as the most expensive TV show ever made. So I think on that front, they did a good job. There was some attention to detail. Like, they did do practical effects for the orcs, which was nice.
Oh, yes, I did like that.
Which is, yeah, in stark contrast to the Hobbit movies. So it looks good. This show looks really good. Music was good. From a technical side of things, everything was really good. So I'm actually one of those people that's watched the movies and not looked too much into the lore and came into the show. So I was watching it, but it wasn't really like the stuff was happening, but not enough was happening in the show. So I'm kind of jumping into the negatives here. But I think like they've got 8 episodes and each episode's about an hour long. So they're decent size episodes. When you look at the whole season as a whole, not that much happens. And I can see why people would just drop off because just, especially in the first half of the season, there's really not that much that happens. They're introducing characters and they're not necessarily like the most charismatic characters either. Like they're there. So there's not much of a hook for people that are coming in without much of a background. So I watch this obviously for this podcast and because I need to, but if I didn't have to watch it, I wouldn't have watched it. Maybe I would have watched it over a year or something. I would have, when I was bored or something, I would have put on an episode, but I wouldn't have rushed to watch the whole season all at once. So that's my thoughts from a neutral perspective. I'm keen to hear your thoughts now.
All right, let's get into the filter free. Are we still spoiler free right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The biggest thing for me, I think, spoiler free, is just the writing. There's just the writing, I feel, just missed the mark on so many in so many ways, so many elements, a lot of episodes. Some of the stuff just outright didn't make sense. A lot of the plots, I feel, progressed for the sake of progressing. A lot of stuff happens by chance, and that leads to really important things later on. And we're talking like character reveals, the way characters link up with each other, the introduction of new characters. We knew that they were going to come up with new characters that Tolkien hadn't wrote about. We knew there'd be a bit of retconning. But when you look back on it, you're like, none of those characters really had that much of an impact. I don't know who I was talking to this with, but like you're following certain storylines and it's very easy to get lost into how it started, where they're actually going, why they're actually going. And yeah, it's really easy to get lost.
Yeah. I think the important thing is why, because I was just questioning like, why is this even important? Why are we watching this?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. And for a show that's marketed as the most expensive show of all time, like it's just, for me, it's just lazy. I think they could have done better with drafting up storylines that, one, made sense. They didn't need to touch on so many points of interest. I feel like they brought in certain characters and certain species as a big throwback because they're like, oh, people will love this, you know, that they love these characters from the original movies. And that really did not sit well with me. One thing I do want to mention is the writers themselves. So there were two writers listed for the whole series, season one. They are Patrick McKay and John D. Payne. I couldn't find much about what they've actually done other than their writing credits for Flash Gordon, Star Trek Beyond, and that was it. As far as big things that I might have heard of.
Flash Gordon, that was a while back.
Yeah, when was
even,
that?
I don't even know. I think it's a TV show.
It's from the 80s, late 80s.
Something weird. But anyways, what I'm trying to get at is that these guys have very thin credentials for a fantasy world of this level, and it shows. Like, you look at the writing for some of these episodes, and it plays out like movies or like shows like Star Trek Beyond, right? You're talking episodes that are like 20, 30 minutes long, have a very short plot point. Things are mostly resolved by the end of each episode. There's an overarching theme, but, you know, that sort of plays on. You can sort of tell that's, like, how this is written. There's also a writing consultant for season one. That's Glenise Mullins. So she was also on Star Trek Discovery as a writer and Terminator Genesis with writing credits. Again, you can kind of tell, right? Like, when you look at
You're saying it's, like, written too casually?
Not written too casually. I think that they didn't write it in the way that this show should have been written, which is there is one story for season one. And it's broken up into eight parts. This feels like episode one, this is what happens. Moving on, episode two, this is what happens. It's like they broke up each part separately and they're like, by the end, they realized by episode eight, they were like, oh, yep, cool. This is where it's at now.
Yeah.
That's how I felt when I was watching it. Because if I rewatch it now, I'm going to be able to see where there's breaks in writing, where things don't make sense, where they've quickly wrapped up lines to move on to the next plot point. So, yeah, for me, writing, just number one.
Yeah,
biggest negative.
It's interesting that you say they're probably experienced in writing shorter episodes that are self-contained.
Yeah.
And now this is like an overarching one-hour episode, eight-episode season show.
There's no way you can have you shouldn't have self-containing episodes.
You shouldn't.
Something this ambitious slash-
requires so much planning and- And
but also dedication. There's a point we'll get to later, but like if you're working in a Tolkien world, the only- self-containing stories are big stories.
Yeah.
Which these guys have not even touched upon. Like, they haven't even gotten to. So, like, to even try and just sum it up in one episode doesn't make sense.
Yep.
If you're going to do it, it would have to be a season. So, then the question is how long are you going to run the season? How are you going to conduct the storyline? So,
I agree. Exactly. Yeah. And it also speaks as to why they compress the timeline. Without spoilers, they compress basically, I would say, 2,000 years worth into, like,
Seven days.
Oh, yeah, whatever it is.
It's
not
even that. This is the worst part. It's not even like condensed. It's like, let's condense some stuff and then let's just pick random stuff that should not exist now, should not be referenced now, shouldn't ever be touched upon. Let's just put it in here.
Yeah.
I agree with your writing point. I think I sense like desperation.
Yeah.
I felt like because maybe, I don't know. I don't know what the full story is regarding having rights to stuff,
but
I would presume that what they wanted to do, or what they should have done was they have material, they have concepts. They, you know where you're going to, or they don't, they need to choose a starting point. They need to choose an end point.
Yep.
And then for the whole show, and then they need to choose what the start and end points for each season are going to be.
Yeah.
And write from there and just stick, you already have the appendices and, you know, the Silmarillion and all these things that can give you at least guidance and just stick to those because there's big gaps to fill in anyway, right?
Yep.
There's no reason, I think, that you need to make things up because you need to make things up anyway. You need to be creative and need to be very persuasive to the, viewers that this is why this event that Tolkien has described at this particular time ends up moving to this event and then this happens. Like, you need to connect the dots. That's really hard to do. But to make it even more ridiculous and say that I'm just going to make it, let's change everything and let's try and get to this weird end point by the end of this season. I just felt like, what was even the point? Like, what was the point of, you're not even using the material. Like, if you're saying you're a prequel or you're going to exist in the universe and you have such a profound writer like Tolkien who has all this work there, what are you, like, this is like, I felt like this was fan fiction.
Yeah.
I felt like people were just like, alternate universe. Sure. Man, Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you can have alternate comics and all shit that happens, right? But if you're talking about this Tolkien universe, just stick to the guiding points that he has there and fill in the rest.
Yeah.
And my main issue was that I think they just went rogue when they started. I'm not sure how much of that was looked over or whether they were just surrounded by yes men or maybe this concept sounded great at the start and then it went to shit. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll touch on something a bit later, but I'm keen to hear your thoughts on.
Well, I want to make sure that I separate my criticism of the show from the general kind of commentary that's going on about like, well, yeah, the general themes of people's expectations not being met. I'm going to maybe give it some fair ground. I'm not going to compare it to the Peter Jackson films as much as I can, despite the fact that the total runtime of season one is approximately equal to the total runtime of all the extended edition films, like 10 hours or so altogether. End to end.
It was about 12 hours for all the extended. So it's almost.
But I think there's different. There's like, obviously, that took place over 3 years. This took place over, you know, maybe 2 years of concentrated filming and principal photography and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to maybe try and isolate each motivation of this series. And also they had restricted material. They couldn't work on everything they wanted to. Yeah. I would love to have seen what they could have done if they didn't have any restriction, right? Because it feels like the biggest issues that everyone's having and that I have as well is with the story, is with the motivations of the plot line. Like Sravan said, some of the plot lines are kind of confusing. You don't understand what motivates these characters to do what they do. And that can be quite a jarring experience for book fans, film fans, or people who are casually watching it. It will alienate them if they don't understand the motivation or the character's motivation, right? Like a simple example is, all right, Bilbo in The Hobbit. He gets bored at home. He doesn't know what to do. He's got this yearning for adventure. So there's an opening for him to go. He goes on this adventure, and then there's all other events that happen afterwards. Whereas in this one, for every character, like if you want to follow the Harfoot's arc, story arc, or you want to follow the story arc of Elendil, Isildur, or that of Galadriel, each character's motivations are obviously separate. And some of them are like, and then there's also Elrond and Durin's arc. Some of these motivations are strongly bonded together, like with mutual friendship or kind of adoration or relationships that move forward. Other ones are not built as strongly. And I think what I would have liked to have seen is maybe less like sporadic, spread out story arcs. So maybe one, two, or three at most storylines that people could actually just concentrate on and focus on and be invested in emotionally. Or the ambition of the team behind the show was great, maybe a little bit more than what they should have focused on. And I think if there's anything that they can learn from is maybe just filter out all the toxicity of the fan base, right? There's a lot of negative feedback that is not deserved.
It's not from a place of like actual criticism.
There's a lot of childish stuff oh, you know, the directors are trash and the actors are trash. Dude, the actors and directors are hardcore fans of Tolkien. Like, if you just watch an interview with any of them, they're obviously passionate. They want to do a good job.
I didn't find any crazy acting issues.
Oh, yeah. No, I think anyone, like, especially us who have actually criticized the show from a standpoint of, well, you know, a proper judgment, won't sink to that level of just, you know, yelling at the actors or directors. I think everyone's trying to do a good job. That's the core of it. Everyone's trying to do a good job, but they're making silly mistakes. That's the problem. There were some points where there's certain camera shots, right? I'm like, that's a silly mistake. Even me as an audience member, I wouldn't have chosen that shot to show this particular emotion or an action. I think that's the one you're talking about, the dude crying.
Like, we'll get to that.
That could have been salvaged simply by doing a slightly separate camera shot. And I'm just like,
well, you didn't like the zoom up straight to the face.
No, it wasn't that. It was the fact that he wasn't even the subject of the shot. There were things happening in the background, and he was just looking at a distance. Like, imagine.
He was on fucking hardcore drugs. He was tripping. He dropped acid or something.
Wouldn't be surprised if that shot wasn't improvised. He was just crying. He couldn't believe where he was.
what the writers were doing to his character.
Yeah. Oh, that could be a motivation.
And they were like, this is brilliant. Let's use it.
We've just done a review of Lord of the Rings, right? We're coming from that high of like cinematic masterpiece. And I think that's much more eye-opening for us as a group. Well, after coming in down from that, watching this, yeah, it's going to be a definite change in our expectations and what we see. So, yeah, look, there's definitely lessons that can be learned, lessons to be learned. But also at the same time, I think a lot of criticism is maybe not deserved from the team. There are good things that they've done. There's also a lot of things they need to fix.
Yeah.
I haven't been on the internet reading all these reviews or whatever. Which criticism that's common on the internet, or what do you think is undeserved, and what is the undeserved criticism?
So there's a lot of criticism coming from people around the cast, as in the diversity in the cast. So they're like, Tolkien didn't want, well, he didn't write it with people of color in the cast.
Sure.
So they're like, no, that's not representative of what Tolkien wanted. So they don't like it just because of that. Right. So that was even before a show released. That was like,
this is when the casting happened.
When the casting happened. And I think there was a lot of fear that it might become like a Netflix production, like everything will be sacrificed for the sake of you know, wokeness.
Yeah.
I don't think any of that happened.
Yeah, I don't see.
I loved Arondia. I loved Disa. The characters were really well done.
Yeah, I can't really see an issue where it's like they've casted someone just because they're of different ethnicity and it's actually causing an issue. Because I would presume that in the writing, I mean, I've only read Lord of the Rings and that was when I was little and hardly took it in. But I presume that, like, there isn't any specific reference to, like, skin color or what people look like. I think it's more character-based.
To be fair, the half-wits are described as darker in color.
Yeah, like brown in skin and kind of slightly more tanned and that kind of
more
stuff.
Tanned, so. Yeah. More tanned, because they spend more time in the sun. Yeah.
Yeah.
More time. Oh,
yeah.
So it kind of makes sense. Again, like, you're right. Like, all this stuff about people complaining before the show even released, talking about issues of wokeness and bigotry and stuff, that's definitely not on. Because, like you said, those characters did a great job. I actually thought they were part of the best parts of the show were those characters.
And I wasn't expecting that. I was going to be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to look at it equally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
Although giving an elf a fade.
Oh yeah, we'll get to the.
Arondir has a fade.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, all the elves that like here's something.
He's going to the barber every day.
The actual physical appearance problem I had was the elves didn't have, or all of them didn't have the same long haired representation that I thought they would have. A lot of them had short buzz cuts or nicely like Celebrimbor. He's in the show, and I'm like, oh, I didn't think he'd look like this, but he looks just like a normal dude. You know,
Elrond's got the.
Well, you reckon that's
They
all kind of pissed off.
Did Tolkien write that all elves, do they just have long hair? Is that a thing?
So here's the thing. He never describes every elf. He only describes key elves. And every key elf he describes does have long hair. Now, if you just take it realistically, right, these are beings that live for forever, right? Realistically, you're not going to go get a haircut every couple of months when you're living that long. Just realistically, right? You're not.
Hey, bro, Arondir was going every 6 hours to get his fade done. That was insane. Sharp.
The other thing, I'll talk about this as well.
Silver elves,
And I got one more point about the executive producers. But at this point, I was talking to Creedy about this morning. I saw a video on the concept art that they had for the show. Basically, like, artists come in and draft out scenes, the characters, everything. Concept art is beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Do you know who did
all the elves? No, I'm actually not sure who did it.
Was it John Howe and Alan Lee? It wasn't from the original.
I think one of them may have been involved.
Oh, really?
Because the art is very similar to Lord of the Rings. What I want to get at is that all the elves have long hair. All of them in this concept art. The scenery is gorgeous. I won't go into that too much. But after doing some research, I was looking at how some of the production cast were talking about how in Lord of the Rings, maintaining wigs and hair to that length is so difficult for such a long period of time.
Oh, yes.
Right? It takes a lot of effort. So to me, the decision to have elves with short hair is laziness. It's cost.
Yeah.
It's like they couldn't be bothered in doing that despite the amount of money they've got. Right? And so when they talk about how they didn't want to just copy Peter Jackson's Middle Earth, they wanted to do their own thing, I don't think that's consistent with what they're actually doing because they've copied designs for the Nazgûl's, the Fel Beasts. They've copied the design for the Balrog.
Yep.
It's pretty much like exactly the same as how Peter Jackson
had it. There's a lot of visual references to Peter Jackson's universe.
100%. So if you're going to say that we don't want to do Peter Jackson's Middle Earth, we want to do our own thing, you can't cut and copy what you're going to take. You know, you have to
follow
it on strong.
I strongly feel, I'm 99% sure this was direction from executive production or executive producers. Even Jeff Bezos maybe coming down and saying, no one should even mention Peter Jackson's trilogy. This should be our own. We need our own stamp on this series. I don't want anyone saying Peter Jackson. And you can see this every time the actors or directors appear on interviews that are like obviously have been kind of vetted. No one mentions Peter Jackson's films in verbatim, but Note of the Rings, he has a way of saying, you know, all the actors obviously are very passionate about Peter Jackson's films. They talk about it by just saying, when I saw Boromir's depiction or when I saw Isildur's depiction, they're referencing the films.
Yeah.
But you can tell they were kind of guided not to mention Peter Jackson, not to mention the trilogy of the films. And it's kind of like, I feel like this must be coming down from executive production.
Down. I think what they think is that this is going to be, they want to create their own legacy, but I highly doubt that's going to happen.
Well, there's rumors of a Aragorn prequel show coming out or being in the works.
With Amazon?
Yeah.
Really? Because this is the reason why Netflix didn't
kill me.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah,
this is the reason why Netflix didn't get their pitch because Netflix wanted to pitch a episodic series based on character, like an Aragorn prequel show, a Gandalf prequel show, Galadriel prequel show. Yeah. Like.
But now Disney Prime has the rights to the appendices.
They do, but the reason why the Tolkien estate shut that down completely was because they absolutely did not want that. So I wonder if this is going to go ahead.
They sold the appendices rights. So Amazon can do whatever they want with the appendices.
So I don't know what is the actual. So yeah, I was trying to figure out. Even Nerd of the Rings doesn't know, but what Has anyone, I guess it's probably, what are they, you probably can't actually talk about the clause unless you're probably involved in it, but like,
yeah.
They have rights to tell stories about appendices, but they don't have the rights to the full appendices, right?
No, no. So they have rights to the appendices, but the appendices only list out at a high level
yeah.
what happens when it mentions names, it mentions certain events.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually mention, it doesn't mention Anatar, for example. His name actually doesn't come up, so they can't use it.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Where does Anatar come up?
Silmarillion.
Okay.
Technically, it does come up in the appendices, but the name is not ever mentioned.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's like his fair form. That's it. It's like it's referenced.
Not even his fair form. It's just he's just known as Sauron. I think they mentioned Myron at some point.
Myron?
But it's just, okay. It's just Sauron. Myron's his name.
Yeah. In First Age, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, your point about, and yeah, we can talk about like what they have rights to and what they don't, but I want to briefly touch on the executive producer stuff because I've got some stats. Season 1 for this has 12 executive producers and two normal producers listed, right? Now, for reference, House of the Dragon on HBO has 7 executive producers for the first 2 seasons, right? So it's roughly 3.5 per season. That's HBO. Mandalorian, Disney show, 5 executive producers for all the seasons so far.
Yep.
Stranger Things on Netflix, 10 executive producers for the 4 seasons so far.
Mm-hmm.
WandaVision, another very expensive show, Disney, 5 executive producers. Wheel of Time Prime, 8 executive producers for the first season. And Halo, another Prime show, 12 executive producers. So what I'm trying to get at is that Prime, I don't know what it is, but they have a lot of executive producers on their shows
yeah.
for one season.
I think all the directors are listed as executive producers as well.
Yeah, they are.
Right. You think so it's maybe just trying to give that momentum?
No, I just think it's
too many
people. Momentum. I just think it's too much.
Too many.
I think there's too many people going in saying it needs to have this.
Right.
And it makes sense, right? You look at some of the characters in this show, and you're like, you can just tell that some executive producers pumped in a bunch of money and said, you want my money, I'll do it, but I want to see hobbits. Right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or,
I see what you mean.
Or, I want to see them because I love them in the original. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
They're like,
the audience is going to love this. Let's chuck them in there. And so the director's like, okay, fine, let's put them.
Yeah.
That could be a massive challenge for the directive team, actually.
Like, what is it's merch, right? Why are the hobbits in this?
It
merch?
Is.
Is there any other reason as to why they're in this?
Nah, is there any merchandise? I don't think there's any merchandise out of this, right?
I'm sure there might be.
Probably is somewhere, yeah.
But yeah, shows like House of the Dragon, I'm comparing it to that a lot because it's very similar. The book Fire and Blood doesn't actually list out details. It lists out times and events.
Hmm.
And so they fill in the gaps and they do it really well. 7 executive producers for the first 2 seasons. It's spread out. You can tell there's less interference, less direction being pulled up from executive people, and more just being given to the creative artists, right?
In terms of the, just quickly on what they have access to, so this is officially what they said. So while Tolkien Estate made demands that the series cannot change anything that is written about the age in which it takes place, the show has all creative freedom it wants. So
about what? The age in which it takes place?
Yeah.
Okay, so Second Age, they can't say this happened in the Third Age or something.
Yeah.
But they can mix around in the dates.
I think so.
Which means they can say that all this happened in this age.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, they've already screwed that.
They have. Yeah.
If
they've brought in First Age stuff.
Hold on.
Okay. That's because that's technically in appendices, like a brief recap of what happens.
All right. Did we want to do any more non-spoilers? Or we can jump into spoilers.
Well, there are some direction faults.
Yeah.
I think there's like some of the action is weird. Like the way they've done it, it's weird. They have points of slow motion, but the way they've done slow motion, when slow motion is done right, it like speeds up and slows down at certain points. And there's some action scenes here where they make everything slow-mo, which gets rid of the impact of certain things. I guess you use slow motion to make evident precise movements or like clutch plays by characters. But I found in this, they just sometimes made a full 10 seconds worth of action into slow-mo, which is actually just, and it got a bit weird. And then also there's like some choreography of some scenes, especially the main character, like Galadriel, some of her action scenes were choreographed terribly. I find that the actress probably could have smashed it, like done even more crazy stuff, but they made it seem like she wasn't trained, even though she was. And there were like some points, there's a certain scene where there's two horses chasing one horse and the people on it, And it's just the stupidest choreographed scene I've ever seen. Makes no sense.
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
This is the one where she's like off the saddle, on the saddle.
Oh, no. That's one of them. No, this is the one where that person gets stopped by like a spear going in between the legs. Yeah. I'm just like, so one person chases. So this person's chasing.
And it looked like the
person A's chasing point B right behind them. And then this other guy just comes from the other side. So what's the point of person A? It was just like, you can do better than this. Like this is. This is some like 5-year-old sort of choreography, you know?
Mm.
And I thought for a show like this, surely they would have hired some really cool. And then the other thing is there's just, to an extent, there's not enough substance / action.
Yeah.
You know, Lord of the Rings was like, people will go back and go to like Helm's Deep action scene or like this particular action scene or crazy stuff. You can't really do this with this. There's not much action. And when it's there, it's like there are some points where it's sure it's all right, but most of it's just bullshit. And then half of the action is a bit lame.
It's also mostly because of the constraints of the way they set it up. It's mostly in the dark as well. So
they put Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
last season. This whole, I feel like they got so much inspiration from season 8 Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah,
because God, this is shit. But yeah, there was a whole episode in the dark. What is as if people? I don't know.
Is this the one? Is this the one where they had the most battle? That episode.
Yeah.
6, I think it was.
And it was clearly wasn't filmed in the dark.
It's filmed in daylight, but they bring the contrast.
And they bring it all down.
Yep.
It's like,
make it look realistic. Yeah.
Just bring it up a bit.
Yeah.
That's it. Do they not test this? Like, well, surely they test it.
Someone was speaking about this. They don't test it on the TVs that we watch it on. They test it in their screens with like high def and the studios
dim,
and stuff.
Dim rooms. And
whereas you look at like people who make songs, you know, like traditionally, they'll produce whatever their song is. They'll take it to their car and they'll listen to it in the car to understand what it
where
plays
people
like.
Actually listen to
people
it.
People actually listen to it.
Yeah.
This stuff, though, it's like, 100%. It's clear that they're not going to.
I know hip hop artists like J. Cole, if you watch his documentary, when he releases his music, he has to go and he has to play it in the car and they always talk about what it sounds like with the subs on. Yeah. You have to do it.
You have to test it. It's just basic. Wrong. Yeah. And it's like, you can't forgive it. The amount of money they pumped into this,
I know.
There's very little forgiveness, I think.
And that particular episode as well is the most expensive one.
Exactly,
what a waste, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and there's I just want to mention that this whole season is kind of built on a couple of mysteries, like who's this person, who's this person.
Yep.
And the reveals are just not that great, to be honest.
Not.
Like
they're not. They spent too much. And we talked about this before. Basco was saying how this show caters towards people who might not have read the lore or don't understand.
Yeah.
If that were the case, I think they could have easily just gone with how it was in the text because that's mystery enough, right? But they've obviously kept it a mystery because they know there are people who have read the texts and they want to appeal to them. And so they want to keep that mystery going until the end. And yeah, there's too much of that will they, won't they kind of tension.
Yeah.
The, is he, is she,
that became
isn't
a primary
he, isn't
focus.
She?
The primary focus, I feel like one major primary focus of this show.
Yeah.
Was to fuck with the audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they do it like in the final episode.
They do it all the time.
Yeah, in the final episode, they do it like multiple times.
Yeah.
And actually, my personal opinion, when they do that was like this, in the final episode, when they do it, I feel like the way in which they fucked with people, I personally think, and we'll reveal this, we'll talk about it in spoilers.
Yeah.
I think if they actually just went along with their original idea, it probably would have been more interesting and far more complex of a concept
than what it actually ended up being.
Yeah.
But it's like the, what is it, like Subversion? What's the show that's like, was famous for it? Was it
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones was, exactly. Where
Subverting expectations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where season 8, spoilers for Game of Thrones, but the whole Night King getting done by Arya, which made absolutely no sense, was only for shock value and-
yeah.
But there's nothing else to that.
Yeah. Like, which the directors admitted to. That's what they literally said. It was for shocking.
And I'm sure in a few years, they'll probably admit to the same thing here. But like, it's like, why?
It wasn't even shocking, though. It was just like
a good story.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. That's the worst part about this.
All right, then. So we'll jump into spoilers. So if you haven't seen Rings of Power and you want to watch it, go watch it. Come back to this point in the episode and listen to us.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Spoilers. So we can start with so I've split it up into sort of four arcs. So there's the Harfoot arc, there's Elrond and Durin, there's the Southlands, and then there's Galadriel and Numenor stuff. So we can do Harfoot's first.
Harfoot and the Stranger.
Everyone's
favorite.
Let
me just say, by the way, I think the best actor in this was Elrond.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, Robert, yeah. I am.
Aramayo.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that guy before. He's dope.
He's young Ned Stark in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's right. The trivia on this is he's young Ned Stark.
Sorry, I spoiled it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I was going to say.
I knew it. Oh, so I have seen him. I was like, why is his face familiar?
Yeah.
And so whenever.
He looks better in this than he does in that. He looked terrible in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he looked like a beta Neil Patrick Harris. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. Well, the way they do this trivia in IMDb, they're always related to like something irrelevant. So he was young Ned Stark in Game of Thrones, and then Sean Bean was in Lord of the Rings as Boromir. So they're like, it's all linked. It's all linked.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought he was very good. He was one of the standouts.
Yeah. Mm. Apparently, when he was cast and he found out he was going to be playing young Elrond, he started going into the depths of the lore and stuff, and he found out that Elrond was the lore guy in the universe. Like, he was the one who was kind of teaching everyone what happened about First Age and, you know, the Second Age in the Lord of the Rings. So he actually he decked out his place.
It's pretty ironic that he's then doing the show then, isn't it?
Well, yeah, like he took it to that point. He decked out his place with passages from Lord of the Rings and passages from the Silmarillion, and he was just like doing all kinds of research. So he put a lot of effort into it. And I think the most impressive thing is he got Hugo Weaving's smile down. Like, he almost replicated Hugo Weaving's, like, facial. I don't know if they cast him for it or if he modeled himself after it. But, yeah, he's done such a good job with this character. I'm really happy with the way he without even bringing in his relationship with Durin, was played by Owain Arthur. Like, their dynamic is really good, but just by himself?
Yeah.
Oh, man, amazing. Knocked it out of the park.
Since we're on it, anyway, maybe we'll start with Elrond and Durin. Because I thought this was actually... I actually found this interesting.
Okay.
The dynamic. There was actually, like, you actually felt for their, you know, friend. You felt like they were friends. And when Durin has to, like, go against his father's wishes towards the end of the season, it was good. I thought this was all pretty well done.
Even before that, when Durin's obviously, like, massively angry at Elrond when they first meet, you kind of don't understand what their beef is.
Yeah.
And they have that competition of breaking the rocks. And finally, like, Everyone's like, what happened? What's wrong? And then Durin's just like, the way Durin's explaining about, you weren't there for 20 years of my life. I had a family. I got married. I had kids. And you missed all of that. And Elrond's just like, oh, shit. Like, you know, we've all had that moment where you haven't talked to a friend in a long time. And you scroll down your, you know, your chat and you're like, oh, crap. I haven't talked to this dude in like months.
5 years.
5 years or 6 months. And you just like, time passes and you just don't realize. That was an amazing commentary on how, for the elves, because they live forever.
Forever. Yeah, they lost.
That they lose.
Track of that time.
Yeah. There's a quote in Lord of the Rings where, you know, you lose the mirth of your golden years. You lose time in yourself.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the hubris of the elves, almost to the point where that's their fate, because they live forever. They don't understand the problems of mortals and they just lose time in themselves. And this was highlighted. I love that part of the show where they kind of bring up that dynamic of an immortal being friends with a mortal dwarf. And he's so offended by that. Like, Durin is so upset that, you know, you weren't there. And then Elrond, actually, the real good thing is he really tries to rekindle that relationship and apologize and say, you know what, I'm going to make it up to you. And Durin, like, that's why Durin is probably my favorite character, because he just kind of bounces back in that playful nature and tells his wife, Dicedo, Elrond's not staying for dinner. You know, don't worry about it. He's leaving. he's kind of brash. But towards the end, he's kind of inviting him to, you know, to stay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Elrond also has that dilemma where he has to not be truthful to Durin for a little portion to get the Mithril. And then, so that was good, because then.
Oh, yeah, where he has to keep an oath, but also not tell the secret of why. Yeah, without compromising his friendship.
Yeah. But it's also for the survival of his race. So it's kind of like really in this little bit of a dilemma on what he can do.
Which is all just made up. The Mithril stuff is made up.
So Mithril stuff is made up. The actual, if I recall correctly, from
Frodo gets a Mithril coat.
Yeah, the Mithril vest, the whole Mithril vest. Yeah.
So
they do end up mining, the dwarves do end up mining Mithril to the point where it gets a bit much, like in terms of the depth they go to. But it just in terms of the reason why the elves had to do it, from my recollection, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was like it wasn't so much that they were dying, but it was that they wanted to protect the lands and the beauty of the nature, and they didn't want that to fade.
Yeah, it's just one of the things that Tolkien mentioned in the books was that over the many, many, many centuries, the elves started to notice that not just the land, but like the blessings of the Valar were like diminishing over time.
Right.
Which is what, you know, in Lord of the Rings, we get that with Elrond. It's like the time of the elves is over. It's like a continuation of this concept that the blessing of the Valar is like diminishing over time.
Well, you see it in Rivendell in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, where it's like constantly fall, the leaves are falling, and you kind of get this feeling like it's passing.
Yeah, that age is passing. In this case, it's a bit
Rivendell
more.
Rivendell is alive because of this, right? Like, Rivendell stays in its glory. That's the whole point.
Rivendell, Lothlorien, they stay in their glory because of the rings, because of the Elven Rings of Power.
Yep.
They're made to preserve and to sustain. That's the reason that they had them.
Yep. Not just their own life, but also that essence of the Valar, like the beauty like of the realm.
Their realms, exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, that whole Mithril thing doesn't make, like, that's obviously not there in the books. And I agree with you, like the Elrond Durin, that was probably arguably one of the best parts of the show, but again,
they also
go
missing for a bit. Like, there's multiple episodes where you don't even see them. It's just like, exactly.
It's only comparatively good.
Exactly. That's right.
Because everything else is shit.
Relative. That's what I want to get at. Like, it's good, but at the same time, like, I actually, like, when I was thinking back on this, I'm like, it's only good because the rest of it is all shit. Like,
but also nothing, like, let's be honest, nothing actually happens. Like, this is important, but it takes so long to get to the crux of the discovery of Mithril and then.
And the writing is shit again. Like, the reasons why Elrond goes is kept from the viewers, right? And then you find out later, oh, they're looking for this ore that they suspect. Again, Mithril was found in Numenor. It was there in the Undying Lands. I forgot the name already. In Valinor. Yeah. Like, they had it there. It's not like this thing was like a secret to the whole Middle-earth.
It wasn't localized just to, like, the Hittaglia Ranges or the Misty Mountains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So...
So from a person who doesn't know that, I thought this was the only place you can get it. Like, that's what it looks like.
Exactly.
In the show. Yeah.
That's what they're trying to get you. Yeah. But it's not. Like, it's found in other places. But they make it such a big point of contention. And then at the start, again, like, this is what's confusing. At the very start, Celebrimbor wants to make a forge, right? And then it's never really touched on again. I feel like the timelines across all these stories flow at different rates. Like there was one episode where the dwarves agree to help the elves. And then the next time you see him, the forge is like halfway done. Like there's a scene
it's
of
like
them.
Towers the being constructed.
Towers are constructed. And then you go back to the Halfwoods and it's been like a day. Yeah. And like their stories progress like nothing. So timeline progression for these stories just overarching, I felt was really weird.
Mm, yeah.
But the writing for this story in particular, I just felt just fell. It just didn't hit the mark. Like it doesn't really feel convincing until you obviously see that Mithril does cure the thing. Again, the whole thing about the Silmaril being, you know, pushed through the mountain with the lightning strike and the Balrog fighting an elf. There's a rumor that that elf was going to be Celeborn.
Oh, I was hoping it would be Glorfindel.
Yeah, I think that's because he's supposed to die from a Balrog.
Or that was in the that was the Second Age in Gondolin when he did that, right? Yeah. So that little that little animation of this brave elf fighting a Balrog and the Balrog twining itself around a tree and lightning hitting it, I felt like they're creating mythology. The team, Amazon Prime team, are kind of co-opting or adapting pre-established mythology in the second age, right? That happened early in the Second Age and some in the First Age. And are kind of writing it into the show to create a narrative of there is something rare that's only located here, and that then becomes this kind of battle of like this dramatic push and pull. It's obviously a reference to a lot of things. I think the biggest, clearest reference is Glorfindel's battle with the Balrog to save Tuor, I believe.
That's First Age, though.
First Age, that's First Age battle.
Stuff. But anyways, what I'm trying to get at is that you just don't, the viewers aren't that convinced, right, with this threat that's facing the elves. And then, like, the way they go about, it's just very convoluted how they go about this story. And the whole, again, you're talking about how Aron makes a vow not to reveal the secret, but it's kind of given, like, Gil-galad's asking him, it's like, do they have Mithril? And he's like, I made a vow.
He's implying it, right?
He would have said no if they don't have Mithril. So it's
I don't understand it. So if it's a secret, then why did he go there? Like, Does that make any sense? Because if this discovery made by, what's his name? Durin the Fourth or whatever.
Durin.
If that it's a secret discovery that's made, how did the rumors get to the elves?
Yeah.
And if that is true, then the rumors are out there, then you could just say, look, the rumors are out there. It's just weird that this is such a tightly kept secret, but it's actually not because it's gotten out there. So
the good thing I think about is that this show is a little bit self-aware in that there's a line that Elrond says where it's like Gil-galad's asking him, can you recount the story of the roots of Ithaglia? And Elrond's like, oh, you know, that's just hearsay and it's not really true. It could just be a myth. Like he's kind of referencing it. It's just some random story that it's kind of traveled throughout the ages. And you kind of see that here and there when the show knows it's doing something that is not part of the lore or is not correct. A character will step in and will kind of make a hint at it. And it's again towards the finale where we know there's about 300 years or even 2,000 years worth of time when technically Annatar comes to the smithfords of the Gwaithymyrdain in Eregion. By the time he arrives, the rings are created, it's like a couple of hundred years past, like 300 years. And then there's a line that Elrond has when he's passing. He's like, we're trying to condense 300 years worth of knowledge into just a couple of days. Like when he's walking past, he says that to
the final episode.
And it's like a reference to the show. It's like they know they're compressing time. So it's a little bit self-aware. I feel like they hopefully they understand that's not a good thing that they have to do that. But, you know, they're forced to do it. Just for my points, I actually quite enjoyed the depictions of Khazad-dûm. The going back into it in the Second Age and looking at it, the fact that there's a flowing waterfall and little bits of detail, I love that. The way they showed Elven sight through Elrond's eyes, that was I liked the little interpretations that they did in that trying things for the first time and referencing the films. Obviously, there were some good elements. Deesa, I said before, I really like her character. It's really refreshing to see for the first time in the Tolkien Legendatum, like a married couple, you know, actually talk out and start developing their dynamic to the main plot. And it's not just they're arguing. This is actually supporting and trying to keep Durin's oath and still manage like expectations and, you know, how's Elrond and sometimes just tells Elrond, look, he's actually really close to you. You don't know how much he missed you during that period. It's really refreshing to see like a nice just married couple going at it, you know, and having their own little moments as well. which is it's nice and fun. It's good.
There was one scene when Deesa's speaking with Elrond and she's trying to cover up where Durin is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Elrond, like,
he figures it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 he figures it out. And I understand that. She met an oath, so she has to keep it. But when Elrond's brought into the fold, she's immediately like, okay, I'm sorry. I had to lie.
Also interesting that they covered up the dwarf children's faces, I guess, because they couldn't be bothered trying to figure out what they would look like.
Yeah. Would dwarf kids have beards or something?
Yeah. Because they're wearing like those massive helmets and running around, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they gave Durin the Third too much almost foresight about the mines, about what was lurking down below. It's almost like even after Durin the Fourth finds like a massive reserve of Mithril that's not that deep, Durin the Third's like, no, we're not going to do it. It's almost like he knows what's down there.
What was the main reason again he didn't want to do it?
Well, that's the thing. You never really know. He just doesn't want to go too deep.
No.
Well,
so does he say that? Because what happens is there's a couple of rock slides and he's like, oh, I don't want to risk my own men.
That's what I'm trying to say. He's saying that he doesn't want to risk any more casualties.
Just for the sake of prolonging the elves. That's what his main thing. He doesn't want to do it for the elves. He doesn't want to risk his own men.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. But it's like,
there's got to be other benefits.
In this point in the story, that greed aspect is still there. And it's amplified when they get the rings of power, when the Dwarven Kings get their rings, right?
Do you reckon we might see during the fourth, slowly fall from his grace?
No, I mean, like, I just think that they made him too cautious at this stage, right?
Not the father, the son.
No, the father, the king.
Yeah. So he's the Third, right?
And the Third.
Durin the Fourth is
Elrond's friend. Yeah.
Arthur's character. Yeah.
So Durin the Third, the king, I just think they made him too cautious. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't really lead well into this. The fact that the Balrog is awake now, that I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah. That was like a Kung Fu Panda scene with like
the feather
falling down the prison and like the leaf falling down and he wakes up. I mean, look, it was
supposed to be the same Balrog?
Yeah.
Was fought. To be the same Balrog that was.
That Gandalf. Fought on the tree.
Yeah.
I think it's implied. Yeah.
So that.
Well, okay. it's definitely it referencing died. The same Balrog that eventually Gandalf faces off, like the
but like what a waste, because you can't, surely they're not going to use that Balrog, like, or they're going against the law, right? People know about there being something evil lurking in the depths of Khazad Dûm, but like there's no one else until Gandalf's fight, no one else is dealing with that. The Balrog doesn't rock up, right? It doesn't fuck around with anyone, does it?
I don't think anyone knows about the Balrog until the dwarves awaken it in Khazad Dûm from mining too deep. No one knows about it.
Yeah. So this is way too, like, if it's awake, what's it doing? Just going to sleep for a thousand years?
Even the whole fall of Balin's conquests of Moria, right?
Yeah.
That obviously happens closer towards the events of the Third Age. But when does the first purge of dwarves happen with the Balrog awakening and basically destroying? Isn't that also like early Third Age?
That's the Third Age. So that's when
end of it would be towards the end, because they don't know about it. I mean, people know that
they don't. No, no. So what happens is all you really know is that the dwarves are given the rings by Annatar.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if he's actually Annatar at that point, but he's given the rings. They don't bend to his will. But it does make them super greedy.
Yeah.
And they start mining, like, they want treasure. Like, they get super greedy. Balrog's awakened. I don't know the timeline of when this actually happens. End of the Second Age is the war, the Last Alliance, right? I think it's either before or just after that, which this Balrog awakens, and the mines. I'm pretty sure it's after, because I'm fairly sure it's after,
because you know the war on the Gimli elves.
Gimli would have visited Khazad Dûm.
Yeah.
In its glory days.
You reckon? Oh, you reckon you heard stories?
I'm pretty sure he would have visited.
Okay.
Well, because he talks, well, at least in the movies, he kind of says, like, these are my cousins.
He hints that he's
been there before. I can't remember this.
Because I remember before the Fellowship goes back into the Mines of Moria, the last time, and before, obviously, Balin and Dwylin and them are, and what is it, Nori?
Yeah.
The dwarves, before they re-inhabit that area of Khazad Dûm. The whole place has been basically besieged and destroyed. I think it was around 300 or 400 years prior?
Maybe. You might be right. Because yeah. Gimli does get amazed when he looks at Dwaradoff for the first time. Like in the movie. Like
yeah.
He looks at it. Could so be. You could be right. Maybe he hasn't seen
it. But there is a note that the dwarves of Moria do help in the in Sauron's war against the elves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a massive, massive thing that they skip over.
Yeah. Completely. No, but that doesn't happen yet.
No, it's meant to have happened by now. Therefore, the rings have been created. It's meant to have happened by now.
That's a whole different question we should talk about. But isn't it like
the rings are created? The three elves' rings are created.
Yeah.
Sauron essentially then comes back up with his own army through the Gap of Rohan up towards Region, wipes out Ostenithil, kills Celebrimbor.
He captures Celebrimbor.
Oh, captures Celebrimbor, but his forces are basically watered off by the Numenoreans who come in the last minute. And also Gil-galad and also Elrond.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That happens. That technically doesn't happen yet. But okay. Sure.
It'd be really cool to see if Rings of Power covers that in later seasons. That the War of the Elves.
Maybe, but we don't know what's happened
with the
other. What
the fuck
they're
doing, man?
Yeah, we don't
know. Do you know?
I have no idea how far they're going to go in the story. But
let's talk about the rings. Maybe we'll talk about that at the end and like the last.
Yeah, we'll talk about the rings at the end. Yeah,
but like
we'll finish off Elrond.
Fucking, that doesn't make sense at the moment. Like, yeah, that makes sense. So I don't know what the fuck they're going to do with the show. But well, as you're saying, if the Dwarves of Moria were in the last battle with Sauron, whatever,
yeah.
That's end of Second Age. So then this whole thing must have happened in Third Age. This whole Balrog being awakening and
destroying. Yeah. It's definitely Third Age.
Yeah. So it's definitely Third Age.
The Balrog thing, yeah.
But also, like, isn't Sauron when he's coming back, right, towards the end of the Third Age for the, you know, towards the time of, like, Frodo
the
and stuff.
The last lines, yeah.
As isn't he attracting, like, I don't know, I haven't probably listened to this from Nerd of the Rings, but like, isn't he trying to attract creatures and like reawaken the Balrog and attract like the dragons to do his bidding and to kind of go to the Lonely Mountain? And isn't he trying to attract all these creatures so that he can, you know, slowly come back to power? Isn't that what Sauron is doing? I don't know. Is that not a thing?
I'm not sure if he's trying to attract them. It's just that the Balrogs once served Morgoth, so they're going to serve Sauron.
Yeah.
But there's only really one that makes a reference, and that's the one in Khazad-dûm.
Yeah.
Smaug, I don't know. I think the dragons at this point, they're no longer that loyal back when they were in the First Age, where the dragons were created by, I think. That's a crazy story. I think Smaug's just greedy. He just wants his own kind of thing. I don't think that there's... Yeah. But you're right. There are forces that do believe that they would be better off with Sauron as
Yeah,
as
I mean, Gandalf, his whole... One of his main motivations to sort all this out is because he... Like establishes a link between if there's this growing shadow or whatever, and then you also allow the dragon to continue. Like if we can defeat the dragon, then you're able to get rid of that threat that can or prevent Smaug from joining the shadow.
Oh, right.
I thought that was a thing.
Maybe. I just thought The Hobbit was just a story, like a kid's story, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Tolkien really read too much into Gandalf's ulterior motives there. Mm. It was just, you know, there's a wizard, there's a hobbit.
Sure.
Nice story for kids, yeah. But, I mean, like, even that, like what you just said then makes more sense than anything that's happened.
But I think this is post him finding out about the whole necromancer and then wondering about Sauron and all this sort of stuff. And then he was, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. It's because after the whole War of the Elves, he gets captured by the Numenoreans, taken back to Numenor, and then he corrupts Numenoreans, and then the whole thing gets sunk. But,
we'll talk about that when we get to
none of this makes sense.
The reason why I brought that up is because there's a point where his body's destroyed and only his spirit endures. And then you get
is destroyed.
His fair form, yeah.
His fair form is destroyed. When he gets into the spirit form, that's when...
When he lands
he's jumping between different areas and he goes to Dol-Guldur and all.
But speaking about Elrond's story at the start, the whole thing about how at the start he's close with Galadriel, right?
Yeah.
He's obviously a... I forgot the name, but he works for Gil-galad. Kind of makes sense. And like the whole thing about how Galadriel...
But they made something up there, right? He's close to Galadriel because he said like he was an orphan, which isn't part of lore.
He didn't say he was an orphan. He said that he was found in the sea, which is true, with his brother.
Okay.
But not by Galadriel. They were found by the Sons of Fëanor, Maglor and thingy. So that's different. What I want to get at is it's weird having Elrond and Galadriel as friends in the show because Galadriel is Elrond's mother-in-law. So Elrond marries Galadriel's daughter, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So with that knowledge now, do you think it's weird how close Elrond and Galadriel are in this show?
Well, they're good friends. I don't think there's anything wrong with
that. Yeah, I don't think there's...
No, they're fucking.
It's weird, man. It's weird. It's weird. Like,
but we're mortal beings and we know what mother-in-law means, right? But like these, for these immortal beings, it's like they never age.
They made Rings of Power for mortal beings, us.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're the ones watching this fucking show. And
but technically Galadriel is like thousands and thousands of years older than Elrond.
We'll get to Galadriel in a second. We'll get to her in a second. So it's just weird, yeah. Right?
It is.
Like, it's weird having that. And it's also weird having... We'll talk about Galadriel in a second. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, story of Elrond and Durin, it's good. I think the writing is flawed. Yeah. Like, the actual concept behind everything. And even in that, it's executed in a certain way, fine, whatever. I don't get where they're going with Durin and Third and Durin the Fourth's conflict that they had, like the arguments that they had.
They kind of close it very abruptly, don't they?
It's like, and there's another 2 years before season two comes out. Like, it's not going to be till 2024. So I'm wondering how many of these storylines people will actually remember.
Yeah. I wasn't even remembering within the show because there'd be episodes where you don't see them.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly.
I'd be like, oh, yeah, this happened with them. Yeah. Like, the recaps were actually really useful in the show because I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, yeah. A lot of like loose ends not being tied up. And that's pretty much it for their.
Yeah. When they come to Celebrimbor and Elrond, they first come to the mountains.
Mm. Yeah.
Isn't that, like, really far?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. They fucking, like, oh, also, yeah, let's travel to Khazad Dûm.
They just walk there.
They walk there.
They walk.
Oh, you mean to the entry point of...
From Eregion to Khazad Dûm. They're just like, let's go to Khazad Dûm. And it's, like, the next scene, they're, like, walking to the doors.
Isn't it, like a day's ride?
There's no horses.
Isn't it, like, a day's ride? Like,
it's more than that. By horse. And it's, like, you're riding nonstop. Maybe it's, like, a couple of days.
Yeah, fair enough.
They're walking there, fucking, like, strolling across, having a nice friendly chat.
Yeah.
Their hair hasn't grown anything because they're taking haircuts for their pompadours and fucking and then Elrond's like, yeah, I'll take over this, you go back.
Yes.
And then Elrond has to walk all the way fucking back.
Oh, like, yeah.
And you said before that they have good attention to detail. I refute that. All right, I'm gonna say no, they don't have good attention.
Okay, fair enough. Well,
there should also be Beleriand. Like, if
Beleriand's destroyed by this point.
Well, has it? Because Beleriand gets destroyed at the time when Numenor... No?
No, that's the War of the Wrath. Beleriand is like whole section next to Middle-earth.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like the War of the Wrath.
When does that go down? During War of the Wrath?
During the War of the Wrath.
Which is also when Numenor goes down.
No. Numenor goes down way later.
Oh, it goes
way
after.
Yeah.
The War of the Wrath is like a 40-year war.
End of first age, right?
It signals the end of the first age.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, did you recognize...
It's sick. War of the Wrath is...
Oh, yeah.
Elrond's father is...
Melkoran.
Beast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He Elendil. Turns into a bloody star.
Erendil.
By the end, right?
After he beats
what's
a
his
dragon.
Name? Erendil.
Erendil.
Oh, yeah. The depictions of how he fights...
And Calagon. The Black.
Yeah. Amazing. Like, on Vingulet. Like, he's flying on...
Yeah.
This is like flying over Thrawn's head right now.
I'll explain all this after the podcast.
It's also flying over my head as well.
I'll explain after the podcast.
I know about it, but I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, talking about the entry of Khazad Dûm, did you recognize location-wise where that was?
No, I was too busy thinking about how fucking hard I had to walk.
Do you remember what the fuck is going on?
No, do you remember the tunnel? Driving to Milford Sound, there's an entry point to the tunnel, right? And if you drive off, there's a nice little mountain wedge where you can stop by and like there's waterfall and there's like snow-capped mountains. And on the left-hand side, there's water coming down the mountain stream.
Is that where?
I'm 100% sure that's where they shot that scene. It was the entry point Milford Sound.
That's cool.
It's a really, really cool place. Yeah, it's like a gorge. It's literally like a gorge.
Yeah. It's about half a day's car ride for reference.
So. yeah, so it's far.
At least a couple of days by horse.
He's still on the... It takes a long time to get...
Anyways, yeah, we'll move on to the next story. Yeah.
Maybe we should do Galadriel next.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Let's do Galadriel because that's the main plot point, right?
All right.
Go for it. Firstly, Morfydd Clark's portrayal of Galadriel. Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what she has to work with, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think she's a great actress. I think in the right settings, I think she could be great. I think this depiction, though, of Galadriel is not the one they should have gone with. That very...
Brash.
Brash has a kind of like, I don't want to say it, but like angsty teen kind of like vibe.
Yeah, that youthful inexperience.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense because her, from when she's born to now... is like way longer than from now to Lord of the Rings. So just looking at that, her growth from when she's born to now should be, logically speaking, more than what it is from now to Lord of the Rings. right? Or at least when we get to that stage. And I know this is a different universe or whatever,
but you just
cannot see this Galadriel being anywhere near the same level of like wisdom and knowledge and people that look up to her in the next, I don't know how many, it's meant to be like 2,000 years from or so, but I don't think it's going to take that long. Anyways, so I think she did an okay job with what she was given, but I think what she was given was shit.
She's a fucking moody teenager.
Yeah.
That's fucking it.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. Like,
there's also no character development.
Why do they choose her for this? Like, is this part of lore that she's constantly, like, her whole motivation is trying to find Sauron? Like, that's not a thing.
Her motivation is to establish a realm of her own in Middle-earth.
Yeah, and she goes with the sons of Fëanor. She goes with them, right? Part of that third. But she's actually not. She goes with them, but she's actually not motivated by.
Well, she's trying to find the Silmarils, right?
Yeah, so after Morgoth kills Fëanor's father, Finwë, everyone, like, a bunch of stuff happens. Fëanor swears to go get them back. They basically do that. Galadriel doesn't technically follow Fëanor there. She follows her cousins up north through to Middle-earth. And the reason she comes, her intentions are to establish a realm of her own, right? Now, it's never specifically stated by Tolkien that she's a warrior, per se. She does have magical powers. Like, elves in Tolkien's world are, like, ethereal creatures, almost alien, right? They've got some pretty crazy powers. And I've written, like, a paragraph of, like, what they can do. I can go through this at some point. But the reason she comes is not to actually fight. And it's not even to, like, battle or, like, find Sauron. It's just to establish a realm of her own. And in doing so, she does counter Sauron at many stages, but she doesn't take part in the wars.
I think she's seen as the most powerful, by the Third Age at least, she's seen as the most powerful being other than Sauron. It's like
she's the second most oldest elf other than Círdan, the shipwright.
Yep.
She's the second oldest there.
And it's strongly hinted at in the Lord of the Rings at least that if she ever did accept the Ring of Power, she would become more powerful than Sauron. If she took it, obviously she's not able to, like, you know, become the master of it. But
there's the whole scene of her kind of passing temptation of wearing the ring, right?
Yeah.
And she says, like, I'll be feared and loved. And so, but also, I think also it's the fact that the elves, especially elves like her, won't be. They can't get corrupted in the same way with the rings. But there's a hint that something might happen, like might maybe be an abuse of power rather than being tempted and pulled towards Sauron. And that's why that's not true. I mean, the three elven rings were kind of created separately to the other ones and not with Annatar overlooking, and therefore.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, there's a whole thing about her hair and, like, how she doesn't give Fëanor her hair.
Correct, yeah.
But she fucking gives Gimli the hair at the end of
Lord of the Rings. Yeah, we spoke about this.
Like, the whole Fellowship of the Ring. Which they don't, in the movie, they just pass over. But, like, for her to give Gimli, and I think it's written, I get this from Nerd of the Rings, but it's, like, written really, really well in that, or maybe it is in Lord of the Rings, but they don't talk about it too much. It's in Fellowship, maybe.
It's in Fellowship. It's in very subtle shots, and you see, like, Orlando Bloom's, Legolas's reaction to it, and that's it. Film, like, book fans will, that's a nice little
shot. But she's supposed to contain, like, the light of the trees, or...
It's said that her hair contains the light of the trees, because she's born under that.
So she's supposed to be, like, this being in itself.
She's a spiritual... Yeah, it's like elves in the Tolkien world are like spiritual beings. Like, they are spirits clad in flesh, if that makes sense. Yeah. Whereas, like, men and dwarves and other beings are like fleshes that are animated by spirits. Does that make sense? So it's like...
And that's why
you think about it in that way, you understand why elves are different in this universe. And that's why...
Well, that's why they act like fucking wankers. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. To an extent. That's why they're so
These things that we consider important to us don't make any sense to them because they're immortal. And that's why, and she's like not even just a regular elf. She's like this whole new level of elf. So like it just seems very weird to make her just like this angry lady.
Yeah.
That's just really keen on just fucking shit up, you know. Like that's it. I'm just like, oh my God.
I'll read this. This is what someone wrote. He's like a Tolkien expert. Like he's talking about elves in Middle Earth. And once I read this, you tell me if this matches what you saw, right? The greatest... Yeah. Answer's no, guys. The greatest elf lords have been known to display incredible magical powers. Finrod uses magic to disguise himself, Beren, and their companions as orcs. His battle with Sauron is a matter of counterspells, with Sauron trying to strip away the magical disguises while Finrod tries to preserve them. Elrond controlled the rivers around Imladris, and Galadriel threw down Dol Guldur with her power. Neither of these are attributed to their rings, as the three rings are specifically stated to be used for preservation and healing. Eol, the dark elf, had limited control of the forests around his home, and was capable of turning them into an inescapable maze. And of course, Luthien performed impressive magical feats through her greater power, in some part be attributed to her partial Maia heritage. Still, even lesser elves had magical powers. The craftsmen of Lorien created the cloaks of the Fellowship to wear, which change hue based on their surroundings. All elf-made weapons, not just Sting, are known to flicker with white or blue flames on occasion. Elves don't need to sleep. They can get all the rest they need from their strange elvish dreams, and they can have them while awake and walking. Their eyes can see not just over great distances and with great precision, but they also perceive things of the unseen world that mortal eyes cannot. They can talk to birds, beasts, and even inanimate natural objects, and it was indeed the elves who awoke the first ents from trees. Tolkien takes great care to indicate that there is something alien and other about the elves. No matter how friendly and charming they are, this always separates them from mortal races. Mm. Right? That's like a summary of like the feeling you get. Yep. When you read the text. And I think Peter Jackson does a good job of displaying that they are different to men and dwarves. I didn't get any of that from this show. I'm not sure if you guys did.
No.
And Galadriel is meant to be the most powerful by the Third Age.
Well, she doesn't do magic in this. Right?
Yeah, there's no magic that she...
There's nothing.
There's nothing. Yeah. She's meant to be able to...
essentially de-elfed her.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Made her some warrior. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's meant to be able to look into people's hearts... meant to be able to discern their true intentions. She does have other magical powers that are hinted in Lord of the Rings, like the books. And people look up to her. And this is another thing that they sort of touch on with her story in this show, with Gil-galad ordering her to take the ship to Valinor. I don't think Gil-galad's in any position to order her to do anything, right? By this stage, Galadriel is already a very established, I would say, chieftain of elves.
Yeah.
She does stay in Lindon at some time with her husband Celeborn, and rules a fiefdom of her own.
Hmm.
With Gil-galad being the High King, sure. But Gil-galad's technically Galadriel's great nephew. So Gil-galad's father.
So a lot younger. Yeah.
Gil-galad's father is Galadriel's nephew, right? Yeah. But you don't get any of that sense in this show. The whole thing about ordering her to take the ship to Valinor, that obviously doesn't happen in the books, and it wouldn't happen anyway because she doesn't want to go back. She wants to rule a realm of her own in Middle-earth. And technically, she's also banned. Yeah, so the whole thing about sending her to Valinor only to have her jump off, I feel, is a very convenient way to meet with Halbrand, right? Like, this is what I was talking about earlier. There's story plot points that they're like, oh,
they need to happen.
It's like, how can we get Galadriel to meet Halbrand on the ocean? Oh, what if they send her to Valinor and she jumps off? You know, it's like, you've got your result and they're trying to find a way to match. And it's
then why the fuck is Halbrand in the ocean?
It's very weak.
Also the other people that they meet on that boat, just that whole interaction was very interesting because they go from like, don't pick her up to like, oh, pick her up, she can help us, to like, push her off.
It's all like a survival situation.
Drown this rat.
Bad
writing.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I feel like some of the depiction of Galadriel as being youthful, inexperienced, brash, some of it was intentionally directed that way. To make her feel like, oh, someone who's not in control. Which, yeah, like you said, I feel like they're trying to bring like first age young Galadriel into this storyline somehow without like stripping her from her magic, stripping her from her authority, her lore. I think there's some reference somewhere like in Numenor, the kids in this time are actually reading stories and their textbooks are filled with stories about Galadriel because that's the first age stuff. So they're actually studying about her. She rocks up to the island. They're like, oh, no. That's the person we've been reading about. Cool. What's her deal? Like, they're completely nonplussed about Galadriel coming up to one. It should be like a whole parade of welcoming this person. But yeah, like, I think I agree with what Bhargav said. They kind of stripped her of her magical essence to make her a practical character. To be like, all right, she can do all this stuff. She can motivate people. She can sow the hearts of Numenor and men and motivate them without having to do any magic. And that makes her more powerful. And I feel, again, this feels like some sort of executive production interference.
Yeah, you can tell that.
Why did they choose her as the main character in the first
place? She shouldn't have been, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's...
They just wanted to choose someone that was supposed to be famous or, like, you know, from... Like, you need to bring someone that people want to follow from Lord of the Rings. But even then, I like, only people who are really invested in Lord of the Rings would be like, yeah, I want to hear about Galadriel. Like, other people just like, yeah, she's... Okay, she's this being, this goddess in Lord of the Rings, and that's it. Like, would you have been like, oh, yeah, Galadriel, I want to find out, like, fucking whatever.
When I first heard about it, I felt like, that's actually interesting.
That's us, though. That's because we're, interested in the lore. But I feel like just normal people who would have watched Lord of the Rings, it's just very weird to pick Galadriel as, like, the one you're going to follow in the
book. Yeah, actually, sorry, yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an interesting choice. She just seemed like a different character, to be honest. Like, because I remember we just watched Lord of the Rings movies, so Galadriel in those movies is completely different. It's not, it doesn't seem like the same character.
Yeah.
Maybe she goes from this to that eventually, but it doesn't seem like it's close to being that.
I have a theory. I have a theory in that there's a certain attempt at marketing the more name familiar characters in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And making them the big draw to the series, or try and get fans, casual, established, to try and say, oh, wow, Galadriel was a kind of side character in the original story. Now she's the central character. We're following her struggles and her story and her, you know, machinations to war.
I just don't think she was a big enough character for her to be that marketable. Like, she's in Lord of the Rings, but she's not one of the main characters.
I just want
to
play the game. I'm so sick of this. Now, just thinking about this. I'm so sick of this. It's exhausting thinking about this show.
Yeah, it is very exhausting. Yeah. But, yeah, her story, though. Yeah, I think it's a story. Like, look, I quite like how – I keep looking to say how I pronounce her name, Morfydd Clark. I liked how she portrayed what she was given. There are moments of brevity. There are moments of wisdom. You kind of see moments of her coming out, like the Galadriel we know.
Yeah.
Like when she's trying to get Theo to keep motivated, and I'm like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Like the
She does actual- say something that Gandalf says around not everything in this world is driven by darkness or
yeah,
by
there are
evil.
Other forces at work.
Yeah,
besides the will of evil.
She does say that, which was, yeah. There are a couple of good lines here and there.
There are nice gems of like, okay, this is the wisdom that we expect, that we would love to see.
But also, like, that whole sequence didn't make much sense because they just met, literally. It's like, you're now a soldier. And she gives him a sword, like, you just met this guy.
Yeah,
like,
is this with her and Theo?
Yeah.
And this is right after the episode where she's telling Adar she's going to take all his orcs out and slaughter them in the sunlight. And then the next episode, Theo's like, she's like, don't have bad thoughts.
Yeah.
Theo. I'm like, your character development, and this is another thing I forgot to mention negatives, but like character development, part of writing, very few characters actually have any development. Elrond, yeah, okay. You can say he's got good development. Durin, you can kind of say he's got some good development. He remains the same character throughout, though, typically.
Pretty
right?
much, yeah.
Galadriel, I don't see any character development in that character.
Hmm.
And, like, again, Gil-galad, not really. He's not really in it that much, but there's not really that much.
Yeah.
Celebrimbor, I don't know. Is there really? I don't think so. And so, like, just in the stories that we've covered so far, the two major arcs, not having any tangible character development over roughly 8 hours worth of show for something that's marketed as the most expensive show ever, I think is a major, major failing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's part of the reason why you don't relate and why you don't, like, it's boring, right?
Yeah,
like,
Galadriel and Elrond, like you said, they're the marketable characters. They're probably the main characters, the two main characters in this show. And, yeah, like, both of them don't do that much in the show.
Yeah. Well, they kind of establish, okay, Galadriel's blinded by revenge or this vengeance. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that we all as fans get it. She's kind of like distracted and blinded and not acting with the wisdom and intelligence that we know her to have. Adar points that out when she does this whole speech about, oh, well, you know, when Adar's saying, you know, we just want to, we're also beings of the one. We want to establish places for ourselves and we want to be safe. And then she simply just says, you're not worthy of existence and I'm going to wipe you out. Because she's saying that because her brother was killed by these forces in the first War of Wrath is what I'm assuming that prologue sequence was, the whole battle of people, elves leaving Valinor to fight on Middle-earth.
Oh, this is, it's a bit different.
It's a bit different, yeah. But I think what was it? The, what was the name for the battle of, the battle, but not the War of the, not the final battle of War of the Wrath, but the one they have at the north of Beleriand. where there's like dragons and Balrogs versus the Elvish forces.
Oh,
Dagor Bragalath.
Yeah.
Dagor Bragalath. I feel like that first prologue sequence was a hint at Dagor Bragalath, but like they were trying to mesh all the wars of Wars of One. So she's witnessed this darkness. She wants to go out. She has this vengeance. It goes way off the rails, and she's talking about basically killing all the orcs. And I'm not going to pretend like we have sympathy for orcs or orcs. We would probably want to see them wiped out as well. But the way that she kind of enforces that, the next line is really well done. It's like Adar's basically telling her, oh, if you're searching for Morgoth's successor, you need to just look in the mirror because you're essentially no different to that essence. So yeah, we see that dip of Galadriel's dark side. And Galadriel has a dark side that is revisited many times. We see it in Lord of the Rings. We see it in The Hobbit.
Sure, again. But it's not.
But it's not convincing.
It's not convincing though, right? Like you're not convinced at all. And the fact that she goes back and forth, episode to episode on this, it's just like the character development isn't permanent. And if it's not permanent, then it's not character development.
Yeah.
You can't have one episode where she's saying all these things to like to a young child, and then, you know, soon after. Or I guess like in this case before, but you can't have that kind of a change happen and then say that this is good writing. But yeah, so her we'll do with her story, right? So goes to Valinor, decides not to go. You realize she says later she doesn't feel worthy. She meets Halbrand. They end up in Numenor.
Here's the problem. What was the motivation of her bringing the army to the Southlands? What indication did she get that the Southlands were in trouble?
Well, she finds that scroll, right? They go to the West after she realizes that, or after Elendil speaks to her about the pre-faithful, all that kind of stuff. He says that they do have texts that were from a long time, from when the people of Numenor worshipped the Valar and when they still had that connection.
Go back. Right at the very start, she goes to some fortress of what, Melkor's fortress?
Oh, yeah, Sauron's? The one in the north. Yeah,
Fortress of Wolves, I think it was something. Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's the one where he... What's that called? That's the one where he gets defeated by...
Sauron.
In the very first, it's like first age stuff. Yeah, it's very old.
Yeah, what's that? What's that? Do you remember what it's called?
The Tower of Wolves.
Tower of Wolves, I think it was called.
Is that what it's called? Melkor. Yeah. Okay. What happens there? I don't even get what happens there, because that instigates her ongoing search or some sort of realization that Sauron is about, right?
No. She knows. She believes that Sauron's back from
the
get-go.
How does she
know? Because Finrod's dead. Like, you know how she has her brother. You know how she looks at her brother's corpse and sees the mark? That mark that she's trying to follow?
Yeah.
And she just gets, like, she's just, like, persistent that Sauron is back.
So then why does she go to that kingdom up in the north or what, that fortress?
I think it's, like, the last traces of where Sauron might have been.
Well, Sauron was Melkor's lieutenant, basically. Yeah. Like, so I think following Melkor or Morgoth. Yeah.
And then she sees that symbol, that same symbol that was carved into Finrod.
And then then she comes back to the elves, asks for help, but they say no.
Yeah.
And then she's like...
She's ordered to travel to Valinor.
Is she ordered? Like, can you... They actually order her?
Gilgalad says, you're going to Valinor.
Okay.
That's not how it should
be. Which is stupid, sure.
Mm. Yeah.
Gets on a ship, then she jumps off. Okay, and then...
Yeah, then she meets Halbrand, and then they get...
They go to Numenor.
Last away, they go to Numenor.
Which, by the way, Numenor has no fucking people in it. Let me just say that is devoid of people.
Yeah.
It's like 30 people on the island, and they somehow manage an army of 15 people. And I'm like, wow, greatest kingdom ever. It's awesome.
The way it's described as being, the greatest. And we're seeing it in this golden age of like this militaristic navy force that is so strong, it pushes back Sauron when they come and help the elves in the War of the Elves. It's like, well, we expect them to have a strong, extremely strong, like Sparta-like military force. That is just,
man, it's
overwhelming.
Like boat people.
We don't see that.
It's
like
rafts and just that's it.
For reference, Numenor is described, like the people are described as being super tall, super strong, right? Like we're talking like Elendil is like 7 foot, like 10 or something, and he's called Elendil Tall. But most people are about 7 foot. They don't ride horses into battle because they can't. They're too big for him.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Greatest military force that exists. And
when they eventually rock up, Sauron gives up. That's the whole thing.
That's the point.
What's supposed to happen is
when Sauron sees the army coming towards him, his forces flee.
He shits his pants and he's like, take me.
Yeah. It's like, and you don't get any of that from this.
That's why I was like, when there's this, we're skipping, but there's a scene where the Numenorian army is somehow knows the GPS location of where these orcs are, first of all.
Yeah.
They've they've gotten into Middle Earth and they're, you know, they're going and they're just riding and yeah. somehow they know the exact location, but there's only like 20 of them.
Yeah.
But you're asking why she wants to go south. It's because she goes to finds a scroll and she's like, have you ever seen this mark before? And
guy. So that's the general threat of something in the east. There is nothing tying Galadriel to that one township or that area, right?
It's because the symbol she realizes is not Mordor. Just a symbol. It's a map.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Of the location.
Isn't it just Mordor and Orodrin, like the mountain?
Yeah, but that whole area of pre-Mordor is like the Southlands. That's literally what it's called. Like that's like the Southland thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she finds that fucking crest thing and then she decides that she realizes that she's found the lost king of the Southlands. And goes to Halbrand and says, you need to claim your throne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What the fuck was that about?
This shits me, right? She looks at a sigil and determines this man is a descendant of kings without checking, without doing any of the homework, without even questioning what it is. And she just accepts it.
He tells her. He's like, I could have killed someone
and
taken
worse, it. What's worse is then they rock up and these random people are like, are you our king? Who are these people? And why are they so desperate for a king? They did all this hard work. Fuck this guy who rocks up. Anyway, the whole help.
And it turns out it wasn't that hard to find out that he wasn't the descendant because she like asked some guy to.
Yeah, she gets her PA to just fuck off somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, can we talk about the reveal?
We'll get there.
Okay.
I saw the best meme about that, by the way. It's so funny. Anyway, all right.
Maybe we'll talk about Numenor now?
Numenor.
Yeah, we can do Numenor.
There's a few characters.
Elendil, Isildur's arc. Okay. Yeah.
Elendil and Isildur should not be alive. They're like, this is like.
Before they were existing?
Elendil and Isildur. Elendil's born 1,500 years after the rings are made, for reference, right? So this is an issue with compressing the timeline. Is you're bringing characters into a period where they should not exist.
Yeah. So Galadriel and him obviously never met.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's anything in the text about Galadriel and him ever meeting. I'm sure Galadriel would have heard of him because of everything that he's done and who he is. Elendil should be known in Numenor, right? In the show, it's sort of like, who are you? And like they're trying to figure out who he is, and he's like, "Oh, my name's Lindor." All this kind of stuff. He should be known because he technically would have been king of Numenor had they had the gender equal succession from the get go. So if women were able to inherit the throne from the get go, he technically would have been king, right? So he's a distant cousin to Ar-Pharazôn and Tamriel, and to their king. His father's really well known, and there's a whole thing about that. He's a really important character. And again, they made the decision to make him lesser known in the court, which I think is stupid. He shouldn't even be alive at this stage. And neither should technically Pharazôn and Muriel and stuff. They're compressing elements that should not exist. And that's because after Sauron, in his fair form, convinces the elves to make the 16 rings, heads back, he then has a bunch of different wars. He gets captured.
By
the Numenoreans. And he travels to Numenor as a prisoner. That's when all this stuff is technically meant to happen with Pharazôn, Muriel, Elendil,
like, as soon as he arrives, it's like he takes time. He gains the trust of Pharazôn, becomes his advisor eventually.
He does that technically in a year. He goes from prisoner to advisor in like 1 year, Pharazôn but seems he's like there for a while.
Pharazôn seems like an asshole, so
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised.
So anyways, the fact that you're compressing timelines, it creates issues that they haven't plugged. And this is something that, again, with the writing, when they know that this is going to create an issue, they don't solve it. And that's why that there's all this stuff about the big wave hitting Numenor and stuff. It's way too soon for any of that to happen, technically. But yeah, so we get Isildur and Elendil. Again, these are characters that I feel like executives are like, we need to have them.
Because it links to
Because it links. People are going to be like, oh, Elendil, Isildur, how are we going to see what happens here? So, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know how Isildur's meant to survive, 2,000 years? Until 2,000 years? 1,000? I don't know how many. I think it's 1,000 years to the War of the Last Alliance.
How old do Numenoreans normally live, their longevity?
It's like 300 years.
Oh, not thousands.
No, no, not thousands. Okay. Not thousands. Okay. No.
Yeah. I mean, outside of the lore, what did you think of like the way they kind of developed Elendil and Isildur and like the whole story about Anarion running off to the west? And then
I didn't get anything about his kids.
Daughter.
I didn't like any of his kids' stories. Arian. I did like Elendil as a character. I thought it was good. except for the crying scene. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything about his kids. I don't understand. They spent too much time on it, I think. We talk about character progression, character development. Isildur, I didn't get anything, really. Like,
so I forgot, is he currently presumed dead? I forgot if he comes back or not.
I think he's presumed dead, but they're pulling the Aragorn thing where the horse goes and finds him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah. So, last time we see him, he's trapped under that fiery house.
Yeah.
But obviously he's not dead.
From the get-go, right, he wants to travel to the west, right?
Yeah.
So he gets himself kicked off the ship. He's off the ship and he doesn't travel to the west. He's like, I want to be part of the army that goes to the east.
No, I think actually, do you think he wants to travel to the west because he hears that voice?
Yeah.
I think that voice is actually from the east. It's actually not from the west. Yeah. Because I think that's what everyone's thinking, right? Because.
But doesn't Elendil and him have that discussion? And he's like, you want to try and find an Arya and you want to try and find your brother who's like apparently got lost in the west of Numenor. And I thought that led to. So it's like. I don't understand. I was so confused.
I was a bit confused. I saw an interview with Maxim Baldry that was conducted by the Matt
from Rings.
No, the Rings. Yeah. And I think he describes it succinctly saying that Isildur's main motivation is to keep his family together. And the fact that Anarion's run off to the West, that's his motivation for going to the West to try and bring him back.
Oh, so his brother's run off to the West.
His brother's run off. Yeah, essentially.
How big is this island? Is this island fucking massive?
It's pretty big.
It's massive. And then what's out in the West?
Like the other cities. The cities, it's assumed because the west is facing Valinor. The cities on the west are more faithful to the elves, whereas the capital and the ones to east are like they're a bit of descent, bit of.
And so his brother ran off there to be amongst the faithful.
No, ran off because it's hinted that their mother died pretty recently, last year or something, and as a result, people are having different fallouts. Isildur's having his own issues, and in this story, he's described that he wants to keep his family together. But the moment he sees Galadriel come in and motivate the troops to kind of go east, he then rekindles his passion to go and become a soldier and become part of the whole force. So when he does see his voice being whispered, that is technically coming
schizophrenia.
Yeah,
it's just so convoluted
from the east.
Like, poor guy.
There's a lot of different ideas they tried to. I think they tried to interpret too many ideas. That's the problem.
So convoluted. Yeah. But yeah, so Galadriel eventually convinces them.
Hmm.
And convinces Halbrand.
Well, just remember, the sea is always right.
The sea is always
possibly
right.
One of the worst things I've ever heard.
Except when it is left.
Oh, west and east.
There was also that scene where, like, they try to sabotage the ship, and like Isildur's trying to like smuggle himself.
Yeah,
in.
That was Farazan's son, Kemen, I think his name is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why that didn't need to be put into the show at all. We know that there's dissent and that Farazan's kind of planning something. It ain't sure.
Yeah. For reference, Farazan's kid was created for the show and Elendil's daughter was created for the show. She's not Arya.
Yeah.
What is her point?
I don't know.
Wait, she does something at the end of the season where she's like with the king, right?
She discovers with the Palantir. Yeah. Again, the Palantir should not be there.
And why is that supposed to be? So they didn't even, they don't even reveal that. They kept that in the dark. So they still have.
Yeah, you don't know what
season two thing. Yeah, it's a season two thing.
But like, what's. What the hell? It's just a Palantir.
I think she's going to see the Great Wave and then she's going to become the Muriel of the books. You know, like how...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's going to be taken hostage?
Wade, maybe. Anyways, the Palantir are technically in Elendil's possession. They're passed down through him. He has more than... He only brings 7 to Middle-earth, but there's 7 hints stones. That there's more.
Yeah.
So they're not lost at this point. So Muriel says that the other 6 are lost. It's way... No, that doesn't happen yet. Elendil brings 7 of the Seeing Stones with him to Middle-earth, and he places them in strategic positions throughout. Amon Sul, Minas Tirith, I think Minas Ithil?
Yep.
Osgiliath.
Osgiliath is the biggest one.
Yeah. And a few others, I can't remember where.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's weird that they decided to have the Palantir and this foresight of the destruction of Numenor when none of that... Like, I reckon it would have been a great surprise if no one knew what was coming, right? So... Anyways, Galadriel convinces them to go south.
Yep, to go to Middle-earth. Yeah.
That's the crux. And they spend a good episode and a half on will they, won't they? It's like, oh, will they go? No, they're not going. It's like, oh, but they are going to go. It's like, nah. And finally, they decide to go.
It was riveting. Right. I loved it.
It's shit.
There's no other way of describing it.
And you can't have a show but without a scene where you have the OOP character teaching a bunch of noob characters had a sword fight, and her like completely like acing all of them in sword fighting.
The funniest and thing was like, I'm going to teach you how to kill an orc, and I was like, oh, don't say stab them, and she's like, stab. I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And also like 6,000 years to say stab.
But also like, and then she makes them seem like they're all shit.
Well, because they're all volunteers, they're not
and
military.
The first guy that's shit ends up being like the commander. Like,
what is this?
How does Numenor have an army like this? This doesn't make any sense. What is going on?
I think it's conscious decisions, because they would have said, oh, an army. Why do they have an army? There's no invading countries. Okay, let's make them have a military, but they don't have weapons. It's just
but they're like, a society.
But they do invade. Yeah. They've got Numenorians have like a bunch of people that travel to Middle Earth via ships, and they've got like catchments there. Like they travel consistently.
Yeah, they have little townships.
Exactly. In the lore they do. I feel like the whole production team or whatever, they would have maybe just sat down and going, all right, why don't we just give these guys swords, armies, lances? And someone's like, oh, why? There's no one's fighting them. They don't need a defense force.
But even that doesn't make sense, because they travel with what, 3 ships, and every single one of them has a horse. And you look at that one scene in the stables, there's like maybe one row of like 10 horses.
But
none of it makes sense.
It's weird though. Like every civilization is just, if you have a town, you have a big city, you have a big island, you have an army. Like it doesn't, even if no one's invading, bro, no one's invading Australia, but we can have an army or some like piece of shit town somewhere. I'm sure it will have some sort of self-defense mechanism, you know? There will be armies. It doesn't make, it's one of the basics. It seems a bit dumb, especially like, you know, it's supposed to replicate like middle age sort of behavior, right? Or this world. So like, it's going to be classic. You have people that fight for you, who protect you. I don't know. Mm. It's weird.
I mean, but
there's sea monsters around.
Sea monsters, yeah. But
so you need someone to fight against this shit.
Yeah, that's true. One positive is the depiction of Numenor when they first sail into Numenor. That was done well, I reckon. I mean, before you know what's in Numenor.
Scenery, yeah. The statue of Arendelle.
Oh, yeah, the statue of Arendelle. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure the sets
and all that stuff is dope.
Visually. See, Elrond's mother is, what's her name? Elrond's mother, the one who turned into a bird temporarily.
Who, Elwing?
Elwing, yeah. You see Elrond's statue has Elwing next to it.
Is that Elwing or is that the Thorondir?
No.
The king of eagles.
No. It was an actual swan. It was like a swan.
Oh, a swan. Okay. I didn't see it properly.
It was cool. And it was
sick. Yeah.
It was actually there. And the music, obviously.
Oh, and the tree.
Sailing into ships.
Yeah. All that's, the whole thing about Numenor looks amazing.
Yeah. Like the world building is actually pretty flawless. It's just the people and the, like, the whole.
Everything else.
And the scenes there are good. Like, there's particular scenes where, like, you have the vision of the, you know, the apocalypse or whatever you call it. And,
the destruction was great. And that, like, destruction pretty much was awesome.
The tree is like, all the white leaves or whatever, or falling off. All that stuff looks incredible, but like, it's all for nothing. It's
exactly,
like,
yeah.
And they happen to be all the scenes in the trailer. So that's why the trailer looks so good. All the, all the scenes that are good for nothing.
And that's why I never watch trailers, because I know that's like a 30-second elevator pitch by executive production trying to get people on. I don't watch that shit. What about,
then Halbrand.
Before you get there, Isildur's relationship with Elendil, like towards the middle episodes part where they finally start bonding. I thought that was pretty good when they actually defeat, they go to the town, they help the villagers, and it's just Elendil, Isildur talking about their relationship with, you know, the horses and stuff, even though they technically shouldn't have horses. It's kind of touching on that. Finally, you see the bond between father and son.
Maybe, but I think just in general, the show took way too much from Peter Jackson's thing.
Yeah.
Quotes, themes, motifs.
I think the direct concepts. Lines would be jarring. Some lines were directly taken from the film.
Yeah, I think it's too much.
No, I thought that scene, good intention. Like, I understand what they're trying to do, but then like saying, "Oh, can you teach me?" Right? That was, he's like, "Oh, can you teach me about how to talk to horses? I understand horses."
Yeah.
And then he just like turned to this crying heap in front of his dad. I was like, "What the fuck is this? What's going on here?"
But yeah, Halbrand's arc in that.
Halbrand's arc, yeah.
Again, it's like he just wants to be left alone. And like, he keeps getting pulled back into this main plot with Bobby Galadriel. And he's constantly saying, no, I don't want to. And
what, was that all just an act, I guess?
Like, well, I mean, I genuinely believe that he was like, I just don't want to, like, screw it. Like, I just don't want to get, I just want to forge things. I want to be like, do my own thing.
But he wanted to stay in Numenor. That's the interesting part. He wanted to stay in Numenor.
Yeah, but we're assuming that this is the vision that he is, that he's following the same steps as Anathar. We know that Halbrand is Sauron, right?
Yeah.
We're assuming Halbrand is Sauron, guys. I don't think that the creators had the vision to think that far ahead, right? I think we've got to bring it back a few steps.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. It's just like, because if we do take that to be the case.
Numenor on a boat. Surely he has other means of getting to Numenor.
If we do take that to be the case, then you have to accept the fact that he does everything by chance. everything falls into his lap by chance, right?
By chance.
It's all coincidence.
Galadriel happens to fall into onto his thing. He happens to come across Numenor. He happens to be swept into Middle-earth to the Southlands, and then happens to get injured, and Galadriel happens to take him to Eregion, not Lindon, to Eregion, and he happens to find Celebrimbor. Like, it's just there's too much chance there. It doesn't make sense. It's shit writing.
There's a theory that Isildur, like, he's somewhere in Southlands. He gets, Beric finds him, the horse finds him, he gets saved. There's a theory. He finds Halbrand's slaughtered body somewhere in the Southlands, and Sauron has basically taken over his body in between the time that
the Sangles. I'll tell you why that's wrong. Nerd of the Rings said this, right?
In his I think it was his theory. Yeah, I
listened to it this morning. The reason that doesn't make sense is because this whole Halbrand is Sauron. This whole Sauron thing happened right at the start where he took up that sigil.
Mm.
So, like, the planning, like, all these actions were committed by not an innocent person. Like, you have to assume that everything is done, because him taking a sigil is not what an innocent Halbrand would do, right? Like, he's just taking this sigil on purpose malintent. So it doesn't really make sense to say that there's actually an innocent Halbrand the whole time until Sauron takes it.
No, but that's true, 'cause he remembers events.
That sounds better, though, because that would make more sense, because this whole Halbrand shit, we'll talk about it.
Everyone, like, I don't know about you, Sauron, but all of the, like, book people were like, we're picking up on things that happened with
I told
with
you guys at the end of Return of the King. I was like Sauron.
Yeah, yeah. And was like, we're pretty sure this dude's Sauron. And when it ended up being the case, it was like, oh, you couldn't have, like, tried to misdirect? And they tried to do a misdirect by making the stranger proclaimed as Sauron by these by the mystics.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But that wasn't the misdirection I was
the reason
for.
That's the reason I was pushing for Halbrand not to be Sauron is because I was trying to assume better writing. Like, if I assumed that the writing would be shit, it's like, yeah, fuck it. I mean, Sauron is Halbrand and this wizard is Gandalf. Like, simplistic. That's easy.
There's a
moment. And they've done it.
There's a moment where it kind of still keeps the door open as to some possibility of what else is happening in the background that we don't see. When Celebrimbor's coming up and saying, oh, we need power over the flesh. We need to tap into the unseen world. And Galadriel's like, what the fuck did you hear this from? Like, this is sounding really evil. And she asks him and he looks really kind of like puzzled and nonplussed, like he just witnessed something weird, like he was kind of shaken, and he's like, oh, I think I overheard it from one of my my smiths. That's when it hit me, like, oh, maybe it's someone, like, at that point we don't know who the reveal is yet. I thought maybe it could be someone who's not on the screen, someone who's just in the background.
Cool.
Yeah, but that writing is too good. The writers are shit.
Yeah,
like,
that would
be
cool. Imagine if, in as you were saying, I think you said you took a screenshot from the trailer or whatever, and you're like, oh, could this be Annotar? Yeah. That'd be sick if that was the case. But even then, it would not be, it's still not, the whole show wouldn't be redeemable, but, like, at least you have something cool creeping in, you know?
I was, at this point in the show, I was hoping that they wouldn't show anything to do with Sauron.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't show the creation of the ring.
Because there's nothing that.
I was thinking about the scene.
Groundwork for it.
You know that scene in Vikings when Odin comes to visit Ragnar's sons to tell him that Ragnar's dead? Spoilers for Vikings.
I've only seen, like, the first three seasons of
No one's going to know what this is. I'll show you guys later.
You mean in Assassin's Creed?
Assassin's Creed.
When you saw it, did you know that that was Odin?
Yeah, immediately.
Okay.
You know. All because you hear the voice and you're like, shit. Like, chills. I'll show you guys on the screen later.
Right.
Anyways, I'll talk about this later. We'll catch on.
Well, devoid from how they did it, the lead up to it, and, you know, the choice. What did you guys think of the actual moment when Halbrand's facing Galadriel and the ball drops, the penny drops? He's like, yeah, I have been awoken since the first discord or the first time that there
was
a noise.
I wasn't surprised because I knew.
Breaking silence.
From the get-go, right? I knew, like, as I saw the story wasn't progressing and the writing was just subpar, I was like, they're not smart enough to do a double twist.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's no more twist there.
Well, this after we already knew that the stranger wasn't Sauron? I think we knew that, right?
You know it.
In the episode.
It's almost like immediate. Like,
yeah, it's like the next scene.
You have
scene,
a fight
right?
And the next scene.
The
you
next
see,
scene. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, it's not that guy. And then.
Okay, let's talk about. Then we should talk about Halbrand. So he's. Yeah, okay, so we've kind of covered how he's come up.
Yeah.
So do you think that. So what are all the hints that he is Sauron are that. Well, I guess. The fact that he's rocked up to Numenor and he's a blacksmith.
The fact that he's a blacksmith and a very capable one is the first hint you ever get.
What does he do? Right? What's the first thing? He makes a sword?
He makes a sword and it looks sick. And he's so intent on being a blacksmith.
Yeah, like he's trying to convince everyone. Steal a blacksmith's guild.
Even beforehand, he bloody ditches all those guys on the boat. When, you know, when the sea monster's trying to kill everyone, he like unties himself from them and like jumps away. And it's like, oh yeah, so he's not a good person, yeah. Right? Just inherently. And then he has the fight in Numenor against those guys and he beats the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, okay, he's definitely not a good person. He loves, he's like, for some reason, he really wants to get into forging things and being a blacksmith.
My first hint that I really was convinced was when he told Galadriel how to manipulate her enemies. He literally told her how to get your enemies to do what you want to do. And I'm like, that's Sauron the Deceiver.
But it's actually not even, actually his advice was decent advice, I found weird because imagine Sauron fucking giving Galadriel decent advice on how to behave is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, like that, there should be no interaction that where this makes sense. But yeah, I agree. You're like, you knew there was something going on with this guy.
Yeah.
That's why I thought he should be from the race of man, but have like this underlying kind of evil or like a bit of evil that then can get exposed. And if he gets corrupted by the ring, he turns into like the Witch King or one of the nine or something like that. I thought that, or a black Numenorean, but like one of the people that gets converted to
one of the kings. I thought he was going towards becoming the Witch King of Angmar or one of the, like, or Camul, someone who ends up going to.
Yeah, because I'm like, you know? That would make sense because you can see a little bit of darkness in him. But my other issue with Halbrand is he has like legitimate, that scene where he then tries to retcon and say that I was just lying to you. But when he's talking about how he found something to fight for, and there's like deep, like there's a lot of expression in his face, and like he's kind of hinting towards Galadriel that something's going on or whatever, right? I just find that you can't. So Sauron is not supposed to. If you're talking about Tolkien writing, right? Melkor was like anarchy, right? Like the whole concept of Melkor is just like fucking do whatever wants to do his own thing. Yeah, and like actively just fuck everything, like just cause. But Sauron comes from the thought that the world will be better in a very ordered manner and doesn't believe in free will and believes he is the one to do it. And it doesn't matter about the subjugation of others. It needs to be done this way, right? You're talking about order. And which is, I think what Tolkien has tried to establish is he's talking about concepts. Like Sauron is not, there's nothing that would indicate in the writing that this guy is a complex person that starts off in this way and he has, oh, I'm going between good. No, it's not that. It's this person's like, it's like how J.K. Rowling, how she wrote Voldemort is even too human. Like even going beyond that, it's like you're this force that's unstoppable and it is wanting to reign over others for the sake of order in a terrible way, right? That's Sauron. To then be like, oh, he can replicate human emotions in this real intricate way, which is what this actor is doing, credit to him.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, now you're muddying. So are you saying like this Sauron person is kind of complex? Because then it's like, you're making Sauron, him too human.
Well, hold on. Doesn't he, in the very, very early ages of the Ainur, doesn't he try to repent? There's a period where he actually...
No, they're like, if you want to repent, you need to come to Valinor. And he's like, nah, fuck that, and he bails out.
No, but there's a period where he goes to indicate that he wants to repent after the fall of Morgoth, I believe. And that's what he's talking about, like, when Galadriel's like, oh, you aligned yourself with Morgoth. And he's like, no, when Morgoth was slain, it was like a grip was released, or a boot was released from my neck.
This is what I think they were trying to go for, and it actually might have landed had they done it properly, was that... If we're taking this to be an alternate universe, and you just assume that after Sauron's master died, he just wanted to do his own thing, which was he just wanted to forge, and he learned under the smith Aule, like the Valar, how to create things. That's his love, genuinely, is to create things. He just wants to make shit. And so he goes to Numenor, the smith's there, he just wants to do that for the rest of his life. I was like, you can, if you push it, like you can actually kind of conceive it, and the actor does a good job of convincing you. But it doesn't do a good job of making you think that that's when you see the reveal, that it's a double play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Like I said, there's too many coincidences. Like, did he plan all? He couldn't have planned all
he
this.
He couldn't have planned any of it.
No. Nah. Yeah. No, it was more so he was riding the wave. And look, he's known as the Deceiver. I wish we saw more of his deception through illusion, because he is a master illusionist. Like, he changes forms all the time. Yeah. He's a shapeshifter, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved to have seen at one point, like, you know, that flashback when you see Galadriel's taken back to Valinor and she's speaking with Finrod as a grown-up now. But the words coming out of Finrod's mouth are like kind of Sauron's illusion. where it's like, you know, you have to touch the dark again and let the rings be created. Don't disturb that. Keep that going. It's like, it would have been really cool if we saw Sauron appearing through Finrod as Annatar to Galadriel to kind of corrupt her, the thing that was most precious to her. Mm. I would have done that.
In real life?
No, in her vision of what she was seeing in going back to Valhalla.
When her and Halbrand are chatting at the end, and then he like goes.
That is, but that is what she, like, that is not true, right? That dream wasn't true. No, that is the corrupted dream.
It was all corrupted dream.
Yeah.
And like, I would have taken, if you're going to take creative liberty, go to the nth degree and create little flashbacks where you saw Sauron in different places, like pushing people to do certain things. That would have been much more like. Yeah.
That would have been actually like.
Like, cool. Like a Game of Thrones wish list where I had where, you know, if Bran actually wogged into different people and made them do shit at different points in time.
Yeah.
It's a similar kind of wish
list. And also, like, right at the end where he's. What? So Celebrimbor was just going to suddenly believe this guy that's like.
Yeah. And he also doesn't question when he goes missing, does he? Like, guy's just gone.
Galadriel doesn't tell anyone.
Firstly, yeah.
He doesn't tell anyone she knows who the Dark Lord is.
It's unbelievable. Even the elves are like, how did you heal this quickly from this wound? If elves are telling you that elven medicine couldn't have, like, it's surprising that you've gotten back.
Oh, yeah. Fucking, he's got an injury. And so Galadriel takes him on a 6-day nonstop ride
on a horse. Yeah, on a horse.
Like, from the Southlands all the way up to Eregion.
Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like,
yeah. Didn't you know that? Yeah, Celebrimbor and they walked it. So it's fine, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They walked it. So these guys can ride
it. That's not what's a problem to me. The problem to me is Galadriel in this version of the story, which is obviously not book accurate. She finds out Sauron's been behind giving Celebrimbor advice on how to forge the rings. She finds out that Sauron is Halbrand and Halbrand is Sauron. And then she doesn't tell anyone. She doesn't stop the production of the rings. If I was her, I'd be like, stop this fucking thing. Destroy these rings. I don't know what Sauron has done. It's going to cause problems. Like, obviously, the rings are needed. But if this is where you're going to go, she can't just be quiet and be like, oh, yeah, Sauron had some good things to say about the rings, so let's keep this going. That doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you're going to show
that. She does it out of shame as well. And he's like, or what happens when they find out that you let me in? Like, are you seriously saying that the ending to this story is that Galadriel has too much of an ego to tell them that this person is actually evil? So go ahead, just make these weapons. Yeah. That's stupid. That is so dumb.
It would have been better if she said, Halbrand was Sauron. We've been deceived.
Just say it straight up.
But to counter it, instead of creating two, we need to create three. That would be enough for me to say, okay, let's do something that he didn't know about.
Or at least, like, make it so that Celebrimbor and Sauron have made, because what's supposed to happen is they're supposed to make the other rings.
Yeah.
And then Celebrimbor makes these rings. But what happened to the other rings?
He's spent like 300 years teaching the elves, the Forge elves, like his ways of like imbibing magic into objects and like teaching them how to create incredible artifacts. And then eventually they create 16 rings.
Seven for the dwarves?
No, none of that. They just create 16 rings.
Oh, really?
Right?
Then
there's no plan to give them to anyone yet. It's just they create 16 rings. All are intended for the elves. And then all are intended for the elves. Sauron goes back to Mordor to create his one ring. In secret, Celebrimbor decides to forge three more rings for particular elves.
Who?
Now, what happens then?
Who hangs on to the 16?
Celebrimbor. He has it with him.
Right.
He locks it away. And then when Sauron comes, when Sauron learns that Celebrimbor made three more, he's furious. He's like, give them to me, basically. And everyone's like, no. Because when Sauron puts on the One Ring for the first time, the elves are aware of his deceit.
Yeah, and they take it off. They take them off.
They take their elven rings off, but I think they put them back on when they go do their own realms and stuff. And then, he comes. Sauron comes, fights, does the battle in Eregion and stuff, takes Celebrimbor hostage. Gets the 16 rings.
Yeah, by force.
The dwarves attack from behind, and then he flees back west.
Yeah.
With Celebrimbor. Tortures him and kills him, and then, like, a bunch of other stuff happens.
Yeah.
Then, in his fair form, decides to give 7 to the dwarf lords and gives 9 rings to men.
Yeah.
Which corrupts them over a long time into the raids. Not but also, just like
does
a-
he... It's not like... I don't. He doesn't, like, just... hand out like 7 at the same time, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like kind of like
one by one,
slowly infiltrating and trying
to. It does. Because the 9 rings, 3 were given to Numenorean royals, 1 was given to a king in the east of men, and the other 5 you don't know which men he gives them to. Yeah. But it's meant to be like this, and that's what I thought this was going to be.
It's like centuries of it's like a great, slow deception.
Exactly, right? That's the thing. Yeah. But this is like 20 minutes of this episode is spent on the Rings of Power,
and
there's
even-
like more. More respect
just
on like
three Elven Rings. They don't even talk about the rings.
I feel like Jeff.
What? And so now he's just going to. And then don't even get me started about. So, surely Sauron in the lore is already supposed to have a certain sort of relationship with Mordor. By the way, Mordor was already called Mordor by the elves long before.
During Melkor's time.
It's not fucking this whole, I thought the whole word art.
The PowerPoint presentation. Or you hear the thing about, sidebar, hear the thing about how everyone's like, oh, nah, the wizard might not be Gandalf because there was no PowerPoint transition.
Sauron changes the Istar.
Gandalf. Anyways, continue.
Yeah.
Well, like, so surely there was some sort of relationship. Like, Mordor doesn't just come about, right? Like, there has to be something. When they're talking about this is going to be the kingdom for which Sauron is going to rule from, there has to be something lurking there that's evil. So there must be some preordained relationship between Sauron and Mordor in those areas that Sauron builds up, right?
Well, after he puts on the One Ring, he creates Barad-dûr, the tower, using the power of the ring.
But he creates the ring.
He creates the ring, yeah.
Mount Doom.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
And so it's weird that this guy, at least what it seems to me at the end of all of this is that now for the first time, he's just rocking up to Mordor and he's just gone for a walk into Mordor. It's like, it just seems very weird.
It's very weird.
Surely he should be more of a, I can now return to Mordor for what I'm going to do. Or, you know, I don't know, like something like that.
Yeah, exactly. See, the 16 rings were created originally to help the preservation of the elves on Middle-earth. So that concept they tried to do with the whole Mithril thing.
Yeah.
But like Kiri said, like you don't see the creation of the other 16 rings. So who does it? And like, Sauron's
so
not going to be.
So far, there's no other rings.
Yeah. And Sauron's influence isn't going to be on these 16 rings now because he's not there. Yeah. He makes these rings with Celebrimbor.
Unless that's what's in his pouch.
Yeah, but that's so stupid, right? Yeah, exactly, right? But then imagine that. That would be the worst thing ever to skip over these rings, which are so important, right?
Yeah.
You think about the Nazgul and how important they are and, like, the doom of the dwarves. It's because of these rings. Like,
I feel like what they're going to do is they're going to show Sauron forging the rings of power, the men of the dwarves in Orodrin, and then making his one and then activating his one, and then everyone who's wearing his rings except for the elves get subjugated instantly.
So they're not going to...
Even like that, even that's too good a writing for this. I don't even have high hopes.
Maybe they're going to make, they're going to make him just make all the rings in Orodruin.
I love my favorite meme of this particular one with the rings is Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park coming up to the camera. Like, eventually you're going to have Rings of Power in your Rings of Power show. Yeah. Hello, is this thing on?
That's good.
I think my funniest was Galadriel. It's like, she's going to Halbrand and it's like, you are the king of the Southlands. And Halbrand's like, I'm not the king of the Southlands. And it's like three episodes later, Galadriel's like, you're not the king of the Southlands. You deceived me.
Yeah. It makes her look dumb. The fact that she was hunting for Sauron while Halbrand was right next to her. Yeah, I mean, you can say that's Sauron's power of deception, but it just makes her look really dumb. It's like,
yeah, it seems like, yeah, it makes Sauron seem like way too OP compared to her. And she's supposed to have
You can make Sauron OP, but they didn't do any of that actual deception or shapeshifting, right? Like they could have shown him masquerading as Celebrimbor at some point, or coming.
But
in.
They make him without doing that. They make him like default. They're just like default Halbrand, just way too OP, and Galadriel shit. Like she's a dumbass. Like that's what a disrespect to the character of Galadriel.
Was, like I'll be honest, it was interesting to see that whole water raft vision of him telling Galadriel, join me and become my queen.
Yeah, that was
like, that's the first time, I didn't even think that that was something that could be explored. Well, and you see that vision of like Sauron and Galadriel in her queen form.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's interesting. And she's also,
that's good imagery. It's interesting imagery.
And the fact that she's like, oh, become, join you as the Dark Lord. And he's like, no, you will bring the light and I will give you power. And
you remind me to stray towards the light.
Straight towards the light. And
or
it's
whatever
like,
he says.
And then he starts to say the lines from Lord of the Rings, where he goes into, you know, I'll make you stronger than the foundations of the earth. Like planting these lines as if when many thousands of years later, Galadriel finally has a chance.
They're trying to like
I'm going to do it myself.
They're trying to retcon, kind of I don't know what the terminology is. It's like a type of retconning, huh?
Yeah.
They're like,
Reestablish the reason why Galadriel wants it for herself as if she can do it without him. And I'm like, no, don't take her power away from that.
Yeah.
She would herself become, one of these elf queens if she had the ring. But yeah, it was an interesting take. Once Halbrand's revealed, it's just like, yeah, you accept it. All right, move on. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they go from here. Like, how are they going to show Charlie Vicker's character, you know, the guy who plays Halbrand,
yeah,
how are they going to show him from now onwards?
Yeah.
That'll be really interesting
to
see.
They need to morph him. I feel like he looks too ordinary to be like this, you know, this incarnation of Sauron. That's my other issue, is what he actually looks like. Like, how much more incredible and kind of mysterious is Annatar in the fair form? I find that far more incredible. I remember when I was playing Shadow of Mordor. They do it so well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unbelievable. Just like, because you first see this guy, like, because I didn't know about this lore. The only reason I looked up lore for Lord of the Rings was because I started playing Shadow of Mordor.
Yep.
Then I started reading about stories and I was like, holy shit, it's quite a lot. And once when I was in ICU, my registrar, who was an absolute Lord of the Rings fiend, was like, let me tell you for the next 8 hours about Lord of the Rings and the Silmarillion. And I got this massive lecture from him. Right. And I was like, whoa, okay. So this is like, there is a lot here. Because I didn't even know about this. But I remember when I was playing that game, when you see this white elf, first assumption is it's just a white elf. That's it.
Yeah.
I was like, who is this guy going to be?
Maybe just some other
important. I didn't know. I was like, there's no way they're dealing with Sauron. And then the revelation of him being evil and being Sauron, I'm like, this imagery is far better than this semi-homeless man being Sauron.
Yeah,
like,
make
it really interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
if you want to see how everyone was expecting this would be done, is the cutscenes from Shadow of Mordor, the flashback cutscenes of Celebrimbor. That was really well executed.
Well, there's two more stories, and there's the shorter ones. I don't think there's as much to say about them, but the other people in the Southlands, like that elf and the lady.
Arondir, Bronwyn, and Theo.
Arondir doesn't act like an elf, right?
Yeah.
Can we all establish that? He's kind of a cool character, but he doesn't act like an elf.
He kind of acts like a different elf.
You're right.
I
would say he acts like a different elf. I was actually happy with the way they did his portrayal.
Yeah.
As an elf, I was like, yeah, look, it's a different universe. If that's how you want to do elves, great. But none of the other elves are like that. So that's what pissed me off.
Yeah.
I was like, if you're going to have a character that like that, keep it consistent.
Who's in love with
Bronwyn.
Bronwyn.
Yeah. And also gets released. Oh, we got to talk about Adar. Fuck. And we got to talk about the orcs.
Yeah. I feel like Adar was a foil for Sauron. Like, they're trying to make him seem like the villain of the show, but he's just...
Let me just say, character of Adar doesn't make any sense. You can't say that you are the first Uruk, meaning orc, right? That's where the term orc comes from, is the word Uruk, right?
Yeah.
And the first Uruk was created by Melkor.
So he's technically older than Galadriel.
Yeah, it's supposed to be... It's his first age shit. Yeah. What the fuck? Are you making this guy just... Yeah, I'm the first orc and
I look
semi-human. Yeah. But also, weren't orcs like these... Didn't he get the elves and transform them into orcs? And then there's like goblin, there's all this weird shit.
So Tolkien wrote it and then he scrapped it. Because the problem is that if you have an elf, all elves make their way into the halls of Mandos.
Yeah.
Right. And so his priest problem was, after he wrote it, he was like, shit, I can't have orcs dying and going to the halls of Mandos. So he scrapped it.
But it would make sense if you turn them to the darkness, then you can like scrap their connection with going to Valinor.
But I think it was a big point with this. So he didn't really go into that much.
Wait, didn't Uruks come after Orcs? Even though the
not Uruk-hai.
Not Uruk-hai, just
Uruks. Just Uruks. Because I thought Uruks were made after the, like, Orcs can't go out in the sun, right? So I thought Uruks were trying to
improve on that. Isn't it?
No. Orcs couldn't go in the sun. Uruk-hai could go in the sun.
Yeah.
Uruk-hai were made by Saruman.
There's two different things.
But Uruk is different.
Uruk is technically not a term they should be using, but I don't think we need to go into it. It's a long discussion.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
The main point is that I think the orcs are done really well.
Orcs were, yeah, like.
Adar, yeah, look, he's going to come back in season 2.
Some of the costume I had issues with, because you can't, I didn't think the faces of these orcs were as good as the Lord of the Rings orcs.
Fair enough.
Not as terrifying, and I found like the makeup just being stiff.
Mm. Fair enough. What I did like was that they seemed formidable, right? Like one orc seemed a force, right?
Yeah.
That's what I liked.
Like that one that fights, what's his name? Yeah.
I wasn't happy with that. I was happy with how,
in the prison,
even for like Theo and Bronwyn,
yeah,
it was like freaky.
Oh,
yeah, that scene in the house, right? And it makes sense. These guys are villagers. They're not fighters.
Yeah.
I had an issue with Eondir's one because conveniently that orc doesn't have any weapons. It's like WWE fighting, right?
That's right, yeah.
Just
wrestling.
Chucking around.
So I like the fact that they were formidable. I didn't mind the whole plot about what they wanted to do with Mount Doom. Wasn't a huge fan of the sword being the key that unlocks the dam. I thought that was a bit weird.
Oh, yeah, the sword.
What the hell is that?
If the volcano is that active to that point, I think rain and snow and shit would have triggered an eruption.
Sense.
So it doesn't make sense.
What is
right?
that? Is that supposed to be some old temple of some dark? What is this?
It's meant to be a tower. like the contingency plan of Melkor once, like if Melkor was captured, they explain it in the show. I think it's bullshit.
None of it's book lore accurate.
Yeah, I think it's bullshit. The whole thing, if Melkor goes down, there's a contingency to redo the lands so that there's a place for another force to come up.
Melkor is up north generally. He doesn't really have a relationship with Mordor, does he? Oh no, weird. He creates Mount Doom. He creates the volcanoes.
He creates volcanoes in general.
Yeah.
He creates, he terraforms a lot of stuff.
That's the bond that they have with Mordor, essentially. It was crafted by that power. So, I mean, I like the visualization of the volcano erupting and that whole, the whole pyroclastic flow and effects of that. And I'm not going to go into who survives pyroclastic flows.
Again, lazy writing, right? It's just lazy. Like, no one is going to survive that. It's an eruption talking hundreds of degrees in temperature.
Yeah.
And it's like pyroplastic. No one survives that.
Yeah,
no.
It's usually 1300 degrees.
The fact that random people survive, you don't get a sense as to why. It's just stupid. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, look, the desolation is pretty raw. Like, you see, like, horses burning and people burnt and that kind of stuff.
It's brutal. Yeah. It's brutal. But Galadriel is, like, unfazed.
Unfazed.
She just stands there as well.
Could be the magic.
Also, she doesn't help people who are dying.
Yeah. She just stands there. And,
It's like, here, let's go.
Adar disappears, so he's obviously going to be back season two.
So what he says one thing, how that he killed Sauron?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is they're going to have to go into this at some point.
Yeah, they're going to have to explain
it. It doesn't make... Yeah, I don't know.
Well, as in whether there's got to be some... I guess Adar doesn't... He can't recognize Halbrand in that situation.
Correct, yeah.
But Halbrand...
They ask him who he is.
Yeah, it's some weird... Who knows? I'm sure it'll be a stupid storyline, but yeah.
Yeah, ooh. I'm sure. anything else about the Southerners? There's nothing really to mention.
I wasn't that invested in this story, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Arondir's arc with Bronwyn and the fact that they all stay together was done well. I think they tried to make the audience care for a bunch of different people who were in struggle and strife. Yeah. The battle scenarios were interesting. I personally would... That whole village, the episode 6 with the siege of the tower and the village and all that kind of stuff, the multi-stage battle, that was done well from the enemy's point of view where they kind of used people as foils against the first wave.
Yeah.
And then they eventually got overwhelmed and almost basically died. Yeah, look, some scenes were done pretty well. Bronwyn almost died.
Why they let Arondir leave? Why'd they let him go?
Why did they let to deliver a message, I think.
Yeah.
It's lazy writing, right? It's just lazy writing. It's like
I think at that point Adar was still.
Why would you deliver a message? Why don't you just go there and kill him or take him hostage? It doesn't make any sense. Go, let them prepare. Like, seriously, this is what
Literally, let them prepare.
It's so
and
dumb.
Then when they get to that village, the house, they're like, oh, we need to let Bronwyn survive. So let's give him 5 minutes for them to heal her.
Yeah.
And then we'll attack. It's stupid. There's too many fake outs with Bronwyn's death, right?
Oh, that's true. Too many fake outs, yeah.
And Theo, again, you're not really attached to these characters that much.
Yeah, who cares?
Character progression. Yes. Yeah, you don't care. Character progression is very
this
lax.
Morgul blade, what's the deal with it? We don't know.
It's the key to that thing. That's all it is.
I thought it was meant to be like a weapon that. Maybe Sauron crafted in that tower, in that fortress in the north, because it obviously replenishes when you stab it. So it looked like a Morgul blade. But it's none of that. I think there's a lot of threads that they start off.
It's just stupid. And how does it end? It ends with...
The flooding of...
The Numenorians taken back to the base camp.
Yeah, Numenorians taken... After the battle, the Numenorians taken back. They basically take him.
Blind.
Yeah. And then that's it. Like, you don't get it, cry. Right? Like, Halbrand's like, oh, yeah, I'm your king, but I'm going to go up north and get healed. And then...
Yeah.
It's just it's and a weird they weird him ending.
As a king,
And then the Arondir, Bronwyn, and Theo basically saying we'll establish a new settlement and a new life north of this.
Area. Oh yeah, to the Pelagia or whatever. Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Halfoots and the stranger.
Who cares about Halfoots?
Okay, if the stranger was not part of this arc, no one would give a shit about the Halfoots.
I don't think anyone gives a shit about the Halfoots anyway.
In general,
not in the story. As in, the only thing that makes them compelling is the fact that they have something to do with this stranger. Right, because the whole Halfoot storyline is not like the Hobbits. In the original Lord of the Rings, the Hobbits were meant to be like the audience relates to the Hobbits suddenly facing all this darkness and enemies and dragons and shit. Whereas here, you can't relate to these Halfoots at all because they're these nomadic.
The Halfoots aren't meant to be in the story.
Man, I was hoping the Halfoots would just die. Just let them all die. Episode one.
Let the stakes get higher. The Halfoots are terrible people. Can we just talk about that for a second? They are terrible people. They're like, we wait for you. They're fucking talking about leaving these people behind and taking their wheels.
Someone is disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck you, man. You get into that. Yeah. Seriously, that's what they told this guy.
And this is what I'm talking about. It's shit writing, right? Like, you're talking, like, these guys have this whole night about it's like, we'll wait for you. Like, oh, this person died by bees. We'll wait for you.
Yeah. Sabak is like, saying, oh, yeah, this one, yeah, got killed by
bees. It turns out all these people were actually bailed on by the group.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's what you feel. I don't know. There's no, again, very little character development, very little progression. You don't really care about any of the characters.
Let's talk about the stranger. Fuck the
stranger.
Does not even talk about that.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about him. The stranger was weird.
Oh, so I'll mention that Markella Cavanaugh's depiction of Nori, that was done well in her own character. That was done really well.
Like
Megan Richards.
I mean, like, what she had to do with her writing is fine. I'm like, whatever. Do you care?
Well, I think she's meant to represent the innocence, the wonder, and the adventure.
Hey, who gives a fuck?
Here's the thing. When you don't connect those themes to why we should care, then people don't understand. Okay, obviously,
I'm pretty sure she is like a representation. Well, her and her friend are like...
Yeah, Poppy, yeah.
Frodo and Sam.
Frodo and Sam, essentially.
Essentially. So like, you can tell. Yeah. And some executive producers like,
Frodo and Sam in the MCU.
MCU,
Yeah, that's all it was. So, yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway, the stranger. Okay,
stranger.
Yeah. So, the stranger rocks up in a meteor. He's Meteor Man.
So, is this in the first episode?
End of the first episode, you see the meteor
so
coming.
So, literally nothing happens between that and the end.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, he doesn't talk.
He exhibits magic, which some of it seems dark, some of it seems light.
Yeah.
Let me just say that nowhere in the lore does it seem like when the Valar send over, or like when whoever tells, is it Manwë? Who sends Gandalf over?
Manwë, yeah.
Yeah. Never does it say you get reincarnated as a retard and then you need to work up and go to level 20 Lord of the Rings and fucking do all the grinding and then you can suddenly learn to speak English instead of all, you know, like what the fuck? What? Like this is just a play. It's a play just to fuck around with the audience. Like,
yeah, right. It's a subvert expectations. That's all it is.
It was, in the beginning, no one knew who this was. So as a draw, it was very mysterious. And it was like, okay, even I was mostly invested as to finding out who the hell is this guy, right? Is he actually Sauron? Is it a Istari? Is it a...
Did you ever think he was Sauron?
No. Well, here's the thing. No, but when there's so much like, no, when there's no answers being provided, you kind of go a bit crazy and like you start...
In the last episode, when they said Lord Sauron or whatever to him and called him Sauron, that's when I messaged you guys and I was like, fucking watch this episode.
Right.
Fucking see this because
what's it.
But
I was like, nah, he's not.
I know. But I was like, if this is what they're running, I got excited. I was like, okay, wait. Actually, we might have something here. This might be cool. Like, and then, it just got.
Okay, you're giving them too much credit.
The idea got taken.
Who are those guys?
The Mystics, they're not any like book.
No
lore
one
things.
Fucking knows, man. But they exist in the unseen world. That's all I know.
Because they just turn up in the second last episode, right? Or
They're in episode four,
I think. Yeah. Three or four. They show up at the meteor site. That's the first time you see
it. I remember now. Yeah.
Given that they can manipulate, they're showing more magic than fucking Galadriel, which annoys me. They look like some form of a Maya, but not Maya, lesser Maya.
But it doesn't, you know what doesn't make sense? What doesn't make sense is that where are they from? If they're from someone, surely they'll be from Sauron or they'll be doings of Melt. Like this.
It doesn't make sense.
If Sauron's around, he's clearly doing things on purpose. So where the fuck are they from?
They're from Rune. That's what they say. They're from Rune, the eastern parts of Middle Earth.
They're retarded. Like they're just like, oh yeah, we'll just find someone that's magical, and then we can figure out Sauron. If they're Sauron. What the fuck? Sauron is around. Like, where's this assumption?
The thing is, they play this whole thing with the constellation.
Yeah,
but that the constellation's got nothing to do with Halbrand. Yeah. It's completely separate story. Like,
my
I mean?
Interpretation is when he was sent, this meteor man, when he was, now that we know who he's Istari, that when he was sent, he was given certain directions or instruction. Mm. And this was one of those things that he kind of is trying to remember. But it's just telling him to go east. That's all it is.
They did it to subvert the expectations.
There's still hope that he could not be Gandalf, but there's too much.
I'm in the Blue Wizard camp, even though there's like five
but
or six.
So far, the dumbest theory is the correct theory.
No.
Dumbest, most obvious piece of shit writing is the writing they're going with.
Maybe, but my thinking is that the creators and the production team and the executives want to keep it ambiguous so that people think it's Gandalf, and then so they can double fake out and later on say, oh, it's one of the Blue Wizards. That's why they gave him
the
line.
Rune, it's not. I mean, Gandalf technically isn't supposed to go to Rune, right?
Gandalf
says he won't go to the east.
Yeah, Gandalf east says that I will not go to the east to which I will not go. But all right, here are all the hints that it's Gandalf, right? A, he's moving around with the precursor to hobbits. B, he literally has that same line
knows.
Well, the one is like, go back to Shadow, right? He's like, return back to the Shadow from which you came. Similar to go back to Shadow. The always follow your nose line, which is really on the nose, pun intended.
Also, was that even a good quote from Lord of the Rings? I thought that was a stupid quote.
Follow your nose.
It was a memorable quote.
Where's follow your nose? The fuck?
It was in Moria when he's talking to
Pippin. When he's like, the air doesn't smell so foul down here.
That's right.
Always follow your nose. It's one of those last lines from Gandalf before he dies. So you remember it. Then it's like,
air doesn't smell so foul is a far better phrase. Like, that's a far better thing to use in follow
your nose. It's the context. Then he's like, when in doubt, always follow your nose.
Yeah. It would have been cool if he's just like...
But this guy's out in open air and he's like, yeah, that way. What? What the fuck is this? Has he got a hay fever?
It would have been cool if Nori's like, which way to ruin? He's like, left. Just like that scene.
Yeah, that's what the count. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit of ambiguity that, okay, they're trying to lead it to see that it's Gandalf. I reckon it's just done to make everyone think it's Gandalf. So that casual fans who haven't seen season one might want to consider watching it, start watching it. I think there's every chance in the world they could twist it again and make
but
him
I
a
swear
blue
in the lore, I've said this multiple times now, like, but like Gandalf is sent by Manwë.
He arrives on a boat.
In order to be a balance against the rising power of Sauron.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing.
Correct.
And he's scared and he actually doesn't want to go initially.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
what Manwë said. It's like, that's why you have to go.
Yeah. And also he naturally has like the ability to, he can manipulate fire and stuff. Like, that's kind of one of his
things. Yeah, basically.
And then he wears the Ring of Fire.
Well, he arrives and Círdan greets him. Yeah. And then Círdan gives him the Ring of Fire.
Oh, straight away?
Yeah.
Oh, pretty much. That's pretty much.
It's a sick scene. Like, he comes on a boat. He's in his, like, his old man and stuff. He's kind of like, you're right. He's scared about being in Middle-earth. He's scared about facing this threat. And Círdan's like, take this. And he gives him the Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
Mm. Narya, I think it's called.
The strongest one is air, isn't it? Which is Galadriel's.
Air is Elrond's. Galadriel's is Adamant. Stone of Adamant.
Yeah. Nenya. Adamant's
a
Nenya.
Anyways, it's a sick scene. And it's like, there's no surprise.
Yeah.
But this is obviously like, you know, one of the Istar. And it's stupid. Like, why how'd the mystics get that wrong? Like
I know. Where are you coming from and how'd you fuck this up so much?
And they're honestly like, they just, like I said, they just play more magic than anyone else in this show. Like, this guy's like shape-shifting and stuff.
That looked cool.
Yeah.
It looked kind of cool.
That's annoying. They're shape-shifting, they're fire-breathing, and they're doing weird, like, everything that Sauron needs to do in this Galadriel needs to do.
You can't do anything, bitch.
Dude.
We had a conversation yesterday where you're like, you were describing how he's in the game, like, he's this blonde.
Yeah. Anatar, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like...
Sick. It's dope. That's what I was saying before when you went out. It's like, that's so cool having like a character that doesn't look what you would normally think of as evil, but then portrays like the ultimate evil.
Yeah.
That's like this, that like contrast is dope.
And I was just seeing these people. I'm like, maybe one of these people is like, maybe that main one is Sauron, but it's just some.
You're giving them, I think we're giving the writers too much credit. Even this whole thing about, I saw this thing about how they wanted to judge the audience's reaction to the reaction of whether it's Gandalf.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to confirm it because they could, if they want it, they can change
they
it to
change
who was
it,
later.
Yeah.
Even that's too smart for me. Like, these guys have shown that they're not competent. So I don't believe that they're going this far. I think they went with the thing that it's Gandalf. If they change it, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But I firmly do believe that they're just running with
also,
it.
Also, if this next season is coming out in a few years, are we going to forget this shit?
100%.
Why?
2024, I think they said.
Yeah, 2024.
Yeah. They're was really going to hurry this up.
Any other story arcs we forgot?
Nah, just the one line that he has, that I'm good, which is amazing.
Oh, good.
You are not peril. You are not a peril. Yeah. You are good.
And the whole
could have said,
Nori teaching him,
I'm the servant of fire, would have been amazing. Like, just something like that, you know?
they're stolen enough dialogue.
But then that's more than that will be.
Yeah,
that's too much.
That's way too much.
I mean, that's the line that Nori gives him. I get it, but it's like, yeah, there's sometimes you can be a little bit too.
I am good.
It was literally just that. I'm like, get elaborate.
Uh-huh. How can you be able to say it like that? But yeah, I think that's.
They should have given.
Yeah,
me,
I think
like,
that's.
Yeah,
Daniel Wayman was the white guy who portrayed the stranger. Great.
He's a good actor.
Great.
He's good actor.
Amazing. He's especially when he's like, I love when he's speaking all of the lines to the trees and he's trying to wake, like he's trying to heal them. What
just
did he say?
High as fuck.
Ayurveda.
He dropped
Ayurveda,
acid.
That kind of stuff.
Mad acid, bro.
He seems
he
genuinely
mixing
sad.
Mixing all sorts of drugs
like,
that day.
That's when I thought, could this be like Treebeard or someone? Because he's really sad every time nature gets harmed. I love that depiction.
You thought he was Treebeard?
Could have been Treebeard.
He has sex with a tree and then he...
Because you know when Treebeard greets Gandalf, he's like, young master Gandalf is older than Gandalf. So like, oh, maybe he's the second age mystic that came down.
But even his development was, it went from like nothing to slow progression to like immediately quoting language in English to Norrin.
Yeah.
In like using quotes and words. Yeah.
What the fuck? What is that stuff? It's what they... Oh, it's
I don't know. Weird.
More questions. Why do they turn to moths?
Yeah. I mean, that's also
Gandalf. That's a Gandalf. That's a Gandalf. Right? Like,
it's reference to the Peter Jackson film depiction of Gandalf, not the books. The moths.
They don't have moths in the books?
There's no motif. Even when Gandalf gets the moth and describes it, a lot of people are like, Radagast? Is it someone? No, it's just meant to represent nature. That's it.
Radagast.
Oh, yeah. We could do final ratings.
Huh?
Final ratings?
Yeah, we could do final ratings. Obviously, mine's a cognitive regression.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I reckon. Yeah.
Needs chemotherapy.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know. I'm going to go like 2 out of 10, I think.
The Tree of Gondor is slowly shedding
3
leaves.
Out of 10. 3 out of 10.
That's my rating. Slowly. It's half shed its leaves.
Okay.
But there's still hope.
Oh, okay. For me, the Tree of Gondor is on fire. It's on fire.
Like,
and
Pippin's vision, Pippin's vision of Gondor through Sauron's eyes.
It's worse than that. Fucking burning to death. Denethor just hacking away at the bottom. That's what this is.
I think we'll close it there. So if you guys have any thoughts on Rings of Power, reply to our TikTok.
What scale is that? I still don't know whether that's a... Is this a good thing? What is your...
What?
The leaves are slowly going away.
No. That the tree is half empty.
So
half,
I guess it's
half,
50%.
50%.
Well, no. Yeah, 50%. I'll put it there because there's a lot of passion from the creative team. There's just the delivery wasn't there.
Fair enough. No, I get you.
All right, reply to the TikTok that we put out on this. I've got 2.5 hours of content.
What are you gonna?
If you want to support the podcast, give us a review on iTunes or Spotify.
cognitiverecalibration.gmail.au.
Almost. recalibrationpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, guys. That was a long one. I couldn't have done it without you.
I mean, you could have done it without me, but I couldn't have done it without you.
So yeah, thanks for joining
thanks
us.
For inviting us.
Spoke a lot of shit.
This kind of wraps up our Lord of the Rings watch.
Yes, and I'll give you guys all a rest for a little while. So next week we've got Black Adam. So me and Taran will tackle that one. We'll get you back on at some stage, maybe towards the end of the year.
Thanks everyone. Thanks for hanging on. Be good.
I am good.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening. Hope you're all staying safe and we'll see you next week for Black Adam.
No more quarantine, so who cares?
Yeah. Catch up.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.